Good morning. Good morning, everybody. I will call the Dallas City Council briefing meeting for Wednesday, May 16th, 2018 to order. I think we have a quorum, and it's good to see everybody here this morning. A report from Mr. Atkins and Mr. Felder and Mr. Callahan. I was out in your neighborhood this morning at the Byron Nelson. It's looking great. The people are there and traffic's running, and you guys are going to have a good weekend in your neighborhood. So congratulations. This morning we will begin with the invocation, and then I'll lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. Invocator this morning, because it is Police Memorial Day, is our Dallas Police Chaplain, Rayford Butler. He has served as our police chaplain for 11 years, and he's been through some good times and some tough times, and he's really done a great job, always being a rock for us. He has served in the teaching and preaching ministry for over 37 years, and 33 years has been dedicated as senior pastor of Greater Mount Hebron Church in West Dallas. Mr. Narby is his district, I believe. He's there. And in 2005, he retired from 19 years of teaching at DISD. He's a Bachelor of Science in Psychology from DBU and a Master of Education from A&M Commerce. Thank you for being here, Chaplain, and all rise.
Because of you, we are here, and we're here with thanksgiving in our heart. We ask you, Lord, to bless this city council meeting, bless all that are assembled here. We ask you, Lord, to remember all of the officers of fallen and standing. Lord, we just thank you so much for what you're doing in our lives today. Without you, Lord, we can't do nothing. But with you, Lord, we can do all things. Thank you so much for us. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Thank you. As we, you know,
Mr. Mayor,
is National
Mr. Mayor.
Police Week, and on May 6th, oh, excuse me, Mr. Narby.
Yes, thank sorry. You, Mr. Mayor. I just wanted to give a shout out to Pastor Butler for being here and doing this for us. He does run, you know, the church in Los Altos there in West Dallas, but also what a lot of people don't know is he's also the president of the Crime Watch in the area. And on any given day, you can see him picking up trash in the neighborhood, reporting illegal dumping, and really helping out our children and our seniors and anybody who's in need in the area. And for that, I want to thank you for it and thank you for today. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. As I said, this week is National Police Week, and today is our Police Memorial Day celebration. Memorial ceremony. And we will be adjourning no later than 11:15 this morning. If you want to walk with our police up the hill, we need to be there at 11:30 because they'll start marching at that point, and then the ceremony starts at 12. We will then reconvene if we haven't finished our work this morning. At 1:30, the event will probably be from 12 to 1. I'll let everybody kind of grab a bite to eat, and we'll get back here at 1:30. We have one presentation today, and it's from Mayor Pro Tem Dwayne Carraway.
Good morning, Council, and good morning to our audience and to everyone that's looking today. Let me first say that it gives me great pleasure to bestow the recognition on a young gentleman that is local, that was local, but that still is local, but who is national now. You know, I'm a blues lover myself, and I had to kind of ingratiate myself to the rap. But now, the most important thing is that when you are from this area, when you are from an area and you become national, it's do you return and what do you do for the neighborhood that you grew up in? And today, this rapper who is from Dallas, who is national, who the staff throughout the city of Dallas are watching now on the television because they love him. And he has come back, and he has come back to give back to the community. That in itself is a lot of things that do not happen with our folks. And when I say our folks, I'm talking about professional athletes and movie stars. A lot of folks don't return home and don't do anything for the community. This young man has made a commitment to annually continue to support the young folks and the community of Dallas in which he grew up in. With that, I'm proud because now I love his music. Not just because he's doing that, it's got a heck of a beat to it. You might see me dancing up here in just a few minutes, and some of the council members, we might have to hit a foot. But the Dallas Cowboys, when you go to the game and you see on the big screen at the Dallas Cowboys, and you see the video. In fact, let's just not see it. Let's hit it and let's see what we got. This is at Jerry Jones World. Turn it up. That's him right there. His name is Crow.
Billy, it's time to leave the football team. It's time. It's your time.
Platinum recording artist, businessman, and philanthropist only begin to describe Dallas native Durrell. With hits like Walk That Walk and Ice Cream Paint Job, Durrell has put Dallas rap on the map. In addition to his music success, last year, Durrell struck a deal with America's Team, creating the Dallas Cowboys' first ever hip-hop clothing line. At only 31 years old, Durrell has only touched the surface of the impact he's going to make on the music scene and in the Dallas community.
Now Durrell and Jerry Jones, now for Jerry to hook up anything with the rap, we sure do have to kind of keep up. Let me bring that thing on and hit to me. It gives me great honor. The guy graduated from Lancaster High School, and he went to Prairie View. So we all go to the Prairie View Grambling game. And when you see, Chief just said something about Grambling. I saw you moving your lips back there, Chief, about Grambling. But he went to Prairie View. It just gives me great honor to want to make sure that we welcome everybody with the drove. Won't you come up first? Now, he's hosting a charity on July the 28th, and all of the benefits go to the local nonprofits, okay? And when I tell you he's a star, he is a star. You can turn on any of the radios, you can go to any of the videos, and you can see him. I just wanted to make sure that you publicly were noticed by the city of Dallas and all of us and our community because you're one of the very few that's young, that's rich, that's making money, but that's giving back, okay? So I want to make sure that from the city of Dallas, my office, we put his picture on there and everything else. It is something that he can have and you can hang on to, okay? And we're going to be very supportive on the 28th and every year from that. Your commitment has been to make sure that you do this annually. Mm. And that's very important with commitment. Everybody with the role, won't y'all stand for a minute so they can see all of the rappers, the photographers, and everybody. And it's all clean music, y'all. I want y'all to know that. It's all clean music. So we don't have to monitor it too. It's all clean. I want to thank each and every one of you for being with him. Because even without you guys, just his voice alone, he can't do it without you all, okay? So you want to have a word or something, it'll be fine. We can hold on to that for you. And here's his poster. I'll hold his poster, one of his posters that we're going to give to the city council.
That's an old poster, but that's cool, though. First off, how y'all doing? I go by Dorwin Marcus DeRoe. That's my real name, a.k.a. DeRoe Music, a.k.a. 6'3". I'm here from Dallas, Texas. I'm born and raised here. This is the first time me ever doing something like this, so, you know, I didn't really have, like, a speech or nothing, but I do got some things I want to say. I mean, this is a big thing because I represent the city from the day I was born. I come through the city. I've done a lot of different things musically, from sports to music to just, you know, going into a new phase of my music career. But I plan to represent Dallas the way that it's supposed to be represented and also maintaining who I am as an artist and as a person. And it's just a lot of stuff that I've done in the past that a lot of people don't know about. I've given back to the city. I've done a ton of toy drives, Thanksgiving drives. I've done a ton of those. You know, I've paid for different schools, books. I've done so many things in the community that a lot of people don't even know about because I just genuinely do them. And I just plan to keep on doing those things. July 28th. I just want to thank y'all for giving me that day to be able to annually do an event here in Dallas and to give to a charity. And I haven't really decided if I want to do an annual concert or an annual just event, but my plan is just to bring the whole city together, especially youth. But not just the youth. It's, you know, every race in the city, every age group, but really for the youth, to bring them together and do things that I know is constructive for them, you know, and also things that I know that they'll benefit from and really gradually growing to help the city grow to where I think it needs to be from my perspective. I look at the city from a different perspective, I'm sure, from everybody in here, and everybody got their own perspective of it. But from my perspective, it's a few things that I want to add to it, and I just want to continue to have y'all support. I thank y'all for this award. I really do. I thank you, Mr. Caraway. It's a lot of people that helped me get here, so this is not something I did by myself. It's people here. My family is here. You know, I wish I could name everybody who, you know, contribute to everything that's happening and what's going on. But, you know, this is just the first of many milestones that I plan to complete, and I just want to let everybody know that came with me, that supported me, man. I thank y'all. I thank my family, you know. Shout out to everybody over there, Brandon Vega, my girl Amber, Kevin, my pops here. And there's a lot of people who couldn't make it. But I just want to thank y'all, the city of Dallas, and just let y'all know that this is a new phase even for me. And I just plan on doing a lot of great things for the city.
Okay. All right. Mayor, if you would, and I'm not going to read it because I know we're tight on time, but we want to present that to you. And then I want to get you all the mayor, if we could take a picture. And we get those council members and get your pops and y'all come on around here. Let's do this.
That's great to be a cowboy, isn't it? This is how we do stuff. This is the cowboy. We're trying to do stuff. Be a leader. It's time to lead the football team. It's time. It's your time.
Platinum recording artist, businessman, and philanthropist only begin to describe Dallas native DeRoe. With hits like Walk That Walk and Ice Cream Paint Job, DeRoe has put Dallas rap on the map. In addition to his music success, last year, DeRoe struck a deal with America's Team, creating the Dallas Cowboys' first ever hip-hop clothing line.
What you got
At only 31 years old, Durrell has only touched the surface of the impact he's going to make on the music scene and in the Dallas community. Durrell has put Dallas rap on the map. In addition to his music success, last year, Durrell struck a deal with America's Team, creating the Dallas Cowboys' first ever hip-hop clothing line. At only 31 years old, Durrell has only touched the surface.
Thank you, Ms. Caraway, and guest, and Billy Ray, you've got the podium.
Thank you. Your open microphone speakers will be this morning David Gazzi, Marvin Crenshaw, David Marquise, Sharon Shepard, and Billy Miller. I'll recite the speaker guidelines. Speakers must observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any speaker making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks, or who becomes boisterous while addressing the City Council, shall be removed from the room. Individuals are allowed 3 minutes to speak. You'll notice the time at the monitor in front of you. When your time is up, please stop. Also, address your comments to Mayor Rollins only. Also, if you have any handouts, go ahead and hand it to the officer to my right, as it will affect your speaking time. Your first speaker, David Gazzi.
Morning. My name is David Gazzi. I live at 3614 Meadow Street here in Dallas, 75215. I'm coming because I'm going to let you know I'm a product of the Dallas public school system, and then I'm a veteran with the U.S. Air Force. My problem is dealing with my home. We're trying to do some renovations.
Can you just put the mic a little bit close to your mouth? Okay, there we go. Thanks. Okay.
We're trying to do some renovation and construction to our home. That's been on delay. We've tried to go through the process with the Landmark Commission, and that's been on hold. It's a big issue. My grandfather, the home that we have, my grandfather bought it in the 1950s. So it's been in the home since then. I've been in the home since 97. To make a quick, my wife and I took a loan out. It was a special loan with Wells Fargo, 203K loan, which allowed us to purchase the property outright from the other heirs and then to give us money for the construction to renovate. Right now, we are 3 months in default of that loan because of the holdup from the Landmark Commission. So we have a deadline of July 31st to complete the project. To continue waiting when no construction has started is causing a big problem. Now, according to the Wheatley Place, because we're in the Wheatley Place Historic District, everything that we are trying to do for the home is permissible in the Wheatley Place. But the Landmark Commission, for some reason, is holding us back. The things that they're asking us to do is economically not feasible. Because of the economics of the exterior of the home, which is delaying the expansion. Even the expansion is on delay. So we did get some help, and I thank my council member, Kevin Felder, and everyone else that's trying to help. But we did get some provision. It's not exactly what we need. Because if we go by that provision that we were allowed, we'll still be at a point where June 21st, we're supposed to see the Dallas Planning Commission. By that date, if we're to wait, we'll be so far into the project that in order to get back to where it was, if we have that permission, it will cause us to get into more expense, to a more expensive nature that is exceeding the budget. Now, one, we're in since we're in the 75215 area code, that reduced our loan considerably for what we were actually able to secure. We were approved for a much higher loan, but once they found out we were in 75215, that reduced considerably. So we're just asking the city manager, the mayor, the city manager, and the city council for a special consideration and intervention of our process so we can continue the updates, or actually so we can start the updates and the renovation of the home.
Thank you. Ms. Felder, do you have a question?
Yes. I met with Mr. Ghazi, and we went to planning and zoning. And so I'm going to ask Mr. Kasem to please go and speak with him and his wife to assist them in any way that you can so that they can get this process underway and allow them to complete the project if it's any way possible.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Marvin Crenshaw.
Good morning. Marvin Crenshaw, 5134 Malcolm X Boulevard. In 2001, in a special election that was held for mayor after the Honorable Ron Kirk had decided to go up and do other things, I was a candidate for mayor in that election. I was thinking about this and I was on my way down this morning. But we had an invitation to speak at the American Jewish Community Center, I think that's what it's called. While I was there, each candidate was asked what would they do, first thing they do if elected mayor. I stated that I would convene a meeting between the Jewish community and the Palestinian community to come up with some type of resolution for the city of Dallas regarding the conflict over there. At that time, there was turmoil, and the people screamed for me to get up and get out and just concentrate on local issues. Roy Williams and Lewis Jones, who were both deceased now, were with me at that time. I looked around, they were gone. But when I came outside, Roy was saying, "Man, did you see the reaction you got on that?" I said, "I did." And I wasn't worried, because as I was walking out, there were about 10 women who were standing up against the wall who said, "Some of us agree with what you're saying." You know, on the left hand. I know many of you have probably been watching the news. This morning I was all on the bus, I was checking my emails, and I'd gotten a email from an organization that I'm associated with. It's called Jewish Voices for Peace. And I'm just going to share some of it with you. It says, "Dear Marvin E., I felt heartsick all day while Ivanka Trump, Jared Kushner, and Benjamin Netanyahu cheered the U.S. Embassy in Jerusalem yesterday. Just 40 miles away, over 1,000 protesters demanding their freedom were shot by Israeli snipers. 60 Palestinians were killed, which brings it up to 113, including 8 children, and thousands have been wounded and injured. This has to stop. I'm furious and heartbroken to see so many politicians and generals speaking in the name of all Jews to justify the massacre of innocent people. JVP is working nonstop right now to set up demonstrations and vigils, visit members of Congress, and protest outside their office and get the word out in the media. And at every opportunity, we'll deliver this emergency petition, which I signed, to show the U.S. and Israeli attacks on Palestinians don't represent American Jews or our allies, which I'm an ally. Mr. Mayor, this city has to take a position on this crucial issue. And we have to take a position more so because of the fact that which I stated to this council, where's the clock, I think, which I stated to this council about 2 or 3 weeks ago, because in January 2016, the governor, Greg Abbott, was summoned on a plane by Sheldon Adelson to go to Israel to talk to Benjamin Netanyahu, which at that time.
Thank you. Your time's up.
Well, Mr. Mayor, it's up to you to do something.
Okay, thank
you. You're the titular head in this city, and people are going to be getting into the streets on this. So you have to make a decision, not the rest of the council. You're the leader.
Thank you.
David Marquette.
I like the titular part.
Good morning. My name is David Marquess, 3110 West Keith Boulevard in Dallas, Texas, 75233, District 3. Mr. Thomas is my representative. I come here today to speak to you in urging you, encouraging you strongly to support both Article 10 and the Parkland Dedication Ordinance. Both of these are crucial. We've been working on these for more than a decade, and it's time now to move them forward on to a June final vote. I'd like to emphasize a few things. One is that sometimes we hear we have to make choices between either housing or parks and trees, either economic development or environmental justice, and that simply is not true. This is not an either-or situation. This is a both-and that applies not only to the southern sector, but to all of Dallas. For example, the Parkland Dedication Ordinance. In North Dallas, we've talked about this, Ms. Grayson. There aren't any parks. There's plenty of green space and private golf courses, but we need more parks. The only way to get those is to redevelop. When places are redeveloped, we can develop parks there, but we need to have money in the bank when that happens. If we always fund our parks through bond packages, we have to wait for the next bond package and incur debt. The Parkland Dedication Ordinance will make that money available then, whether it's in southern Dallas or west Dallas or east Dallas or north Dallas. So we need that Parkland Dedication Ordinance. Let me give an example of a way that we can embrace a bigger vision. Back in 1999, I was asked by the council, including Barbara Mallory Caraway, to take on a project that led to the Oak Cliff Nature Preserve. We got 250 units of affordable housing, saved 120 acres of trees, got a new library and a new school, and that led to another 250 units of affordable housing, a residential single-family subdivision, another school, and all that retail at Westmoreland, Illinois. Because we didn't see the trees as an obstacle, we saw the trees as an opportunity. And we used federal, state, and local money to create that preserve, which became a national model for affordable housing and sustainability. The two go together. We simply need to think differently and to have a bigger vision and to embrace that vision. Proverbs 19 tells us that where the people have no vision, the people will perish. Now let's talk about justice a moment, because we must have justice for everyone in Dallas, no matter where they live. That means access to the blessings that God has bestowed upon us, the blessings of nature, and also the protections of nature. Trees clean the air. They give us better air quality. That means people have a chance to breathe better, including our children and our senior citizens. We also need to make sure that we have open space to absorb stormwater, because I assure you, in years to come, we are going to experience extreme heat, extreme drought, and extreme rain. When that rain falls, will it fall upon a just city, a city that is vibrant and growing and just for all? I encourage you today, support both these ordinances. We need them both. Thank you.
Thank Sharon you. Shepherd. Sharon Shepherd, not present. Billy Miller. Billy Miller, not present. Robert Kent.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor, City Council, City Manager Broadnax. Thank you for your attention today. My name is Robert Kent. I live at 4512 Swiss Avenue. I'm here to speak in favor of the Parkland Dedication Ordinance. I work for an organization called the Trust for Public Land. We believe that every American living in a city today should have a park within a 10-minute walk of where they live. Right now, unfortunately, only 60% of Dallas residents have a park within walking distance of their home. That means 500,000 people, including 150,000 children, cannot walk out their door and reach a park within walking distance in a safe amount of time. I've been a part of a group that's helped work on this Parkland Dedication Ordinance for over a year now, and we believe it's important to pass because, frankly, our city is falling behind. As I mentioned before, only 60% of our city has a park within walking distance, and that's a figure that's basically stayed stagnant for the last 3 to 4 years. This is because we really need more funding to pay for the expansion of our park system. The Parkland Dedication Ordinance is a pay-as-you-go approach to parks funding. It's money that we don't have to borrow in a bond program, and therefore it's money we don't have to pay interest on in the future. We really believe that parks are the heart of our city. It's no surprise that over 1 million people visited Clybourne Park last year. The Parkland Dedication Ordinance will help us bring great parks within walking distance of every resident of our city, and I hope that we can count on your support. Thank you.
Thank you.
This concludes your morning speakers. We'll now move to your voting agenda. Item 1, approval of minutes of the May 2nd, 2018 City Council meeting.
We have a motion. We have a motion to second. Any edits, discussion? All in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion's carried.
Agenda item 2 is consideration of appointments to boards and commissions. This morning we only have one individual appointment to the Youth Commission. Celeste Gearhart is being nominated by Mayor Rawlings.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion's carried.
Mr. Mayor, your briefings continue.
Thank you. We will begin with briefing A on park land dedication. For the record, since the official agenda had it parkland, it is two words, park land dedication ordinance. Mr. Kossom and Mr. Winters will be presenting this morning. Mr. Kossom, welcome.
Yes, good morning. The first briefing on the agenda this morning is a parkland dedication ordinance. I think we'll begin the briefing. I'll give an introduction on the background and how we got here, the process we went through to get to this point. And I think Willis and Ryan will kind of go over the details of the proposal itself. And I do want to say this is kind of both these proposals before you today ultimately involved a lot of community input, and there was a lot of time and effort put into to both these proposals that come before you today. The requested action at this point is that we move forward the recommendation of the City Plan Commission to a council agenda for consideration. The rationale for the ordinance really is that as we continue to experience rapid growth, we need to make sure our park system can grow with that. The last significant increase in neighborhood and community park acreage occurred back in the 80s and early 90s. The parkland dedication ordinance will ensure that developers help share the responsibilities of providing new parkland and amenities for new residents as opposed to fully burdening existing residents. This is kind of a pay-as-you-go. As we add residents, we want to make sure we can add to the park system. The first parkland dedication ordinance in Texas actually dates back to 1955 in Corpus Christi. Most of the largest cities in Texas do currently have a parkland dedication ordinance. Houston, Austin, San Antonio, Fort Worth, and El Paso all have these ordinances. And most surrounding suburbs have them as well. The Park and Recreation Board was originally briefed on this back in November of 2016. City Council Quality of Life Committee was briefed 4 times during 2017 on it. It was directed to staff to proceed with an ordinance. Since this would be an amendment to Chapter 51A, it was directed to the City Plan Commission. Their subcommittee that deals with the dedication provisions is the Subdivision Review Committee. They did meet 5 different occasions to consider this ordinance and ultimately unanimously recommended approval to City Plan Commission. The Plan Commission was then briefed on it at 2 different occasions, and the Plan Commission again recommended approval of the ordinance by a 15-0 vote in December of 2017. Following that, the Park and Recreation Board did approve a resolution supporting the action of the City Plan Commission. As developing this ordinance, we did convene a working group of both park advocates, developers, and other stakeholders to come up with these concepts. They met at five different times during April and May back in 2017. But that just provides you kind of a quick background of how we got here, and I'll turn it over to Willis to kind of present the actual proposal.
Good morning. Willis Winters, Director of Dallas Park and Recreation. I'm also here with Ryan O'Connor, who's a program manager in our department. I'll go over now the requirements of the proposed ordinance that was approved by the CPC and also the fees. So starting on page 9, the dedication requirements and fees contained in the ordinance are based on existing criteria and factors of the Dallas Park system, number of parks, number of acres per person, number of parks in a certain category, neighborhood and community parks per person. A lot of the information and all the calculations can be found in the appendix. We'll be glad to go over that with you if you have questions on that. The dedication requirements in the ordinance and the fee recommendations are not arbitrary. They utilize the calculations utilized to determine the fees and requirements, utilize the best practices from other cities in the state, dating back, as Mr. Kossum said, to 1955, when the first ordinance was enacted in Texas. Basically, Texas cities ask developers to not only dedicate parkland, but to also make improvements so that the residents of the city can benefit from public parks. On page 10, these are the recommendations for land dedication. So a single-family residence in a larger development requires four single-family residences, 1 acre per 100 dwelling units. Multifamily apartment complex, 1 acre per 255 one-bedroom units, and 1 acre per 127 two-bedroom units. And then finally, the final component of the ordinance is a hotel-motel requirement, a land dedication of 1 acre per 233 rooms. Then there's also a development fee requirement on top of the land dedication. But on page 11, you can also do in lieu of a land dedication, you can pay a fee. So page 11 shows what the total fee would be. Single family is $1,165 per unit, per dwelling unit. Multifamily, $457 for a one-bedroom or less, or studio efficiency, $917 for a two-bedroom or greater. And then the hotel, motel, is $500 per room. These fees are in line with competitive with surrounding communities. Mr. Kossum's department did a overall benchmarking study of total development fees in Dallas, and I believe he can share more with you that, including the parkland component, our overall development fees are at the kind of the lower end of the competitive range. So the total fee, again, staying on page 11, is composed of a fee in lieu of land dedication and the park development fee. So a developer has the option of dedicating land at the rates that described on page 10, 1 acre per 100 dwelling units, and then they must also pay a development fee to develop that land. And those are all based on our current development costs of about a typical $600,000 for a neighborhood park. The fee in lieu for land acquisition is based on $1.75 a square foot for land acquisition. That is an extraordinarily conservative assumption. We are currently pursuing land acquisition for a new park in North Dallas, and it's going to come in at $30 a square foot. And downtown is substantially higher than that. On page 12 are some examples of how this land dedication and development fee would impact some typical types of developments in Dallas. The first one is a single-family residential development comprised of a typical project that we see in different parts, especially in East Dallas, a 20-home townhouse development. The land dedication required for this would be under a quarter of an acre and $8,000, a little over $8,000 in park development fee, or a total fee if they don't want to dedicate the land of $23,000. And that's based, again, on that $1.75 square foot. A multifamily, 150-unit multifamily development, which comprises, as in this example, 121-bedroom units and 32-bedroom units, would require a land dedication of just under three-quarters of an acre and $28,470 in park development fee. If they didn't want to dedicate the land, the total fee, which again would be the fee in lieu of dedication and the park development fee, a total fee of $82,000. And then the final example is a 150-room hotel, motel. Land dedication for a complex of this size would be just under two-thirds of an acre, plus $26,000 park development fee, or a total fee, including the fee in lieu, of $75,000. Beginning on page 13 and continuing with 14, we'll go over some of the components of the parkland dedication ordinance that was unanimously approved by the City Plan Commission in December of 2017. So beginning on 14, I'll go through these quickly, is the concept of a park dedication zone. And for those of you on the Quality of Life Committee, we previously, over a year of briefings, used the word nexus zone. So no one liked that word. So here's the new terminology, park dedication zones. We're proposing, and I'll show you a map in a moment, to use these six existing park maintenance districts and to create a new zone around downtown Dallas and the 15 contiguous neighborhoods that are spelled out in the Downtown 360 plan. So for a total of seven park dedication zones. These zones are already established with our six maintenance districts, so there's we're not creating new arbitrary zones. The zones are small enough to be responsive to individual developments and large enough to provide land dedication options to developers. So what that means is that if a developer is doing a new residential development in Zone 6, we believe that Zone 6 is of an appropriate size that if he dedicates land or if we or pays a fee in lieu and we buy land, that that project will benefit their development. But it also gives them enough flexibility to find land to dedicate or for us to find land to purchase within that dedication zone. All six zones have, not including downtown, but the other six park maintenance zones, have roughly the same number of park acres and amenities, again, with the exception of downtown. So page 15 shows you Dallas divided up into seven parkland dedication zones. You can see the six, one through six, are the current park maintenance district boundaries, and it's the new zone seven, which is downtown, and the 15 surrounding neighborhoods, according to the Downtown 360 plan. And then on page 16, we overlay these zones and boundaries with the Trust for Public Land service gap analysis that Mr. Kent mentioned in his comments that show the park deserts in Dallas. These are the areas of the city illustrated in the varying color, the color densities there that currently are not within a 10-minute walk of a Dallas resident. You can see they are equally spread throughout the city, and they occur in every zone. So the area that's not in color is roughly the 60% of Dallas residents and citizens that currently live within a 10-minute walk. The areas with color do not live within a 10-minute walk. On page 17, it's proposed, again, now going through some of the requirements, components that were approved by the CPC, the time limit for the city to expend fees collected through this ordinance is 10 years. So we have 10 years to buy land. Now, keep in mind that the fees that we collect, the revenues generated by this ordinance, are not coming in all at once because they're tied to the building permit phase, not to the initial development and platting phase. It would be great if we could do that, but that puts the burden on the developer. By tying it to the building permit phase, it shifts the burden to the builder. So every time a builder takes out a building permit for a single-family residence in a larger subdivision, and there may be 5 or 20 builders building that subdivision, he or she will pay $1,165 for a building into the parkland dedication ordinance. And if there's 200 units in a development, it could take 5 years to collect all the fees from 200 separate building permits. So it'll take time to amass the fees for us to be able to buy land. The minimum dedication size for a developer would be 1 acre with exceptions. A typical exception would be in a neighborhood that is extremely dense, like Uptown or Deep Ellum or State Thomas, where there are no parks, and where less than a one-acre-sized park would have impact on the residences and the development and the surrounding neighborhood. There's also a component called the fee adjustment review, which involves an escalator that DCAD employs that determines the value of residential property appraisals It can value, it can have a maximum increase or decrease of 5%. That's what's written into the ordinance. So what this says is that based on the DCAD single-family residential value, the parkland development ordinance could increase or decrease by a maximum 5% per year. On page 18, change of density and teardowns. So the example here is if a developer buys an existing 1960s 100-unit apartment complex, intends to tear it down and build a 200-unit complex. The developer would only be charged fees for the additional density. That's the new 100 units, not for the existing or the old 100 units, if the work commences within 5 years. So if he gets after it and does the project within 5 years, he would pay development fees on based on 100 new units or increased density. If the work does not commence within 5 years and land sits vacant during that period, then when the developer gets going after 5 years, they'd be charged fees based on the full 200 units. One other thing I'd like to mention here is that single-family teardowns are exempted because they basically are not changing the density in our neighborhoods. So you can imagine in neighborhoods throughout Dallas, if a homeowner or a builder buys a house at property value, tears it down, there will be no parkland dedication fee charged to them. CPC also recommended implementation of this ordinance on January 1st, 2019. The land acceptance standards described on page 19, you can scan this. These are things that we're looking for when we accept a land dedication. We want it to be on a public street, accessible to the public and connecting to the neighborhood. We want all the trash and structures on the property removed. We want the property to be usable as a public park, not have a water retention basin or a lot of topography where it would not be usable as a park, and other aspects that you can see there. Page 20 describes some options that the developer has. He or she would receive 100% credit applied to the development fee for improvements made to a park or trail adjacent to the property. Also, private parks would receive 100% credit if the parks and amenities are accessible to the public and designed according to our City of Dallas Park Department standards. On page 21, and this will tie into the following briefing on Article 10, dedicated parkland may be used to meet tree mitigation requirements required by Article 10 if it meets the requirements that are stated there. It contains protected trees. They are of suitable size. The documentation provided, meets publicly accessible park standards for on-site only. Then on page 22, continuing with some developer offsets and credits, this basically means that it allows developers to utilize current zoning designations to dedicate land for a common area in order to reduce their lot size and increase density of the development. This component, I think, is in the current code. David, you can correct me if I'm wrong. Was not specifically considered by the CPC, but it felt it was important to state it because it's currently allowed. On page 23, the Quality of Life Arts and Culture Committee, expressed concern about the downtown park dedication zone and the revenues that might be collected there. They would probably be among the highest, if not the highest, of any of the seven zones. So we came up with a proposal that we'd like to present to the City Council that would allow fees generated in the downtown Zone 7 to make capital improvements not only in Zone 7, but also to the citywide trail network. This would, we believe that residents of Zone 7 downtown benefit from improvements to the trail system, since the network basically is connected and radiates from downtown, and downtown being the hub of the entire trail network. There's limited land availability for acquisition of new parks in this zone, and the priority trail segments would be identified through an update to our trail network master plan. Now, the appendix includes all the methodologies to develop land dedication requirements and fees, as well as fee benchmarking info and comments from TREC with the Real Estate Council with staff responses. But before I leave this page, I want to say that we recognize our severe need for land dedication in Zone 7 is in the Cedars neighborhood. And so that would be the priority for the first and highest priority for expending revenues collected through the dedication ordinance. So today we are asking you to recommend the proposed ordinance as unanimously approved by the City Plan Commission with amendments to expand the use of fees generated in the downtown zone to support our citywide trail system. And then finally, I'd like to close with a few comments. Parks and open space are essential, or an essential component of the quality of life for Dallas residents. Parks act as neighborhood anchors. They enhance property values and generate economic development at a rate of 7-1, a rate of return on an investment. And that has been documented through our park impact study that we completed 3 years ago, 7-1 return on investment. The parkland dedication ordinance is a key strategy to increasing open space and parkland available to Dallas residents. This gets back to the 10-minute walk initiative with the in our partnership with the Trust for Public Land. I want you to understand that this isn't, we're not putting all of our marbles in this single bag for parkland dedication. We are taking other initiatives. One of them is capital bond program, but another one is our series of recent interlocal agreements that the City Council has approved with Richardson ISD and Dallas ISD, and 2 weeks ago the Dallas ISD Board of Trustees approved the ILA that will allow us to utilize existing school campuses as neighborhood parks at nights and on weekends. So we have 7 campuses identified with the Richardson Independent School District, and we have 25 campuses now approved by Dallas ISD for neighborhood parks in Dallas. Even though the 7 new campuses from that we have identified in Richardson were calculated into the Trust for Public Land's recent park score, our score for the 10-minute walk remained the same. Even though we added 7 new neighborhood parks automatically calculated into the score, our score remained the same because the population of Dallas is growing. And that's just an indication of how important all these initiatives are to address our shortage of parks. And finally, the Parkland Dedication Ordinance requires developers to share in the cost of buying land and developing new costs and new parks. This partially shifts the responsibility of acquisition and development and takes the burden, the total 100% burden, off the Dallas citizens and taxpayers and shifts it as a sharing mechanism to the development community. So, Mr. Mayor and council members, that concludes the briefing. We do have a lot of information in the appendix, and we'll be glad to answer any questions you have.
Thank you, Mr. Winters. Thank you, Mr. Cossum. I will call on our chair, woman of the Quality of Life, Arts and Culture Committee that worked on this, to speak first.
Thank you, Mayor. This parkland dedication is an idea that has come up at City Hall at various times over the last, I don't know, what would you say, Mr. Winters, 20 years? and we've never actually gone forward with it. But several years ago, Councilmember Young brought it up when she was a member of the Quality of Life Committee, and the committee was very enthusiastic about it and said, let's go forward, let's see if we can work on this, and let's see if we can get it done. And we gave ourselves a one-year timeline and said, this will be back and through council in a year. Well, that was several years ago. But, you know, in the interim, it's gotten a lot better, I think, than what it was originally proposed as, because there's been a huge amount of community input, working with the development community, working with the park board, working with citizens. And so I think it's as good as it's ever going to get right now because it's had so much input. I look at it and I think, well, for District 12, it's really not going to help very much for a long time because we're not doing any redevelopment. But as is true for District 12 or any of your districts, if this is in place, the opportunity is then going to be there. When there is a chance that you can get some additional open space, green space, this will make sure that there's some money there so you can buy some land and expand that open space, green space in your district. So I'm hopeful that the time has come and this council will move forward with this parkland dedication ordinance. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Grayson. Mr. Atkins.
Yes, the parkland, you know, I'm trying to look at, we just passed a housing policy, and I wish we had this presentation before we passed a housing policy. I'm kind of concerned is that affordable houses, you know, when we had a developer said, if I want to use 10% for affordable, and it's going to cost an X amount of dollars, and we put this fee compound with affordable units. Did y'all give any thoughts about that?
Yes, sir. I think some of the offsets we're looking at will hopefully be able to accommodate those items. In addition, as the housing policy is continually vetted and certain zones are established, certainly fee reductions can be incorporated in those. But generally speaking, I think the offsets we provided where parkland dedication could be met at the same time you're meeting if you choose to pursue a tree conservation area for mitigation purposes, that those both can serve the same purpose. You can get credit for trees within parkland towards your mitigation requirements. So I think it's kind of a mixture of the different tools and options out there that provide that. We had discussions about Willis had mentioned of our community unit development process, whereby if you set aside a certain amount of land, then you can reduce your lot size to a certain percentage to make up for that land that's been dedicated. Now, it will have to meet our park standards for that purposes, but that's another opportunity, I think, that people could take advantage of.
Okay, when you say people, I'm talking about developers. If the developer wanted to build something, and they say they got 330 units, and they said we're going to set aside 10% for affordable, and that made 30-something units, so what would that affect them, you know, with this fee? You know, so therefore they said, well, I can't do those 10% of the unit because I got to pay this fee. So do y'all run those numbers? Do y'all, before y'all made this decision, on these fees?
I think the fees were calculated on the demand for the parkland itself. But in terms of the affordable housing component, I think you're right. I mean, this is going to be a continuing issue,
right,
if folks are paying additional fees. But I think what we've tried to do is provide adequate offsets. Now, none of them is tied to a developer volunteering to develop a certain percentage of affordable housing. I think if that's built into a future policy that we would help provide incentives to do that, then I think that could be done with that policy.
Well, I think with a policy, I guess I go back to TC and Raquel with this task force, the housing task force. That's something we need to bring to them immediately to look into that, because that's my concern with that. Number two, Willis, how many parks do we have in District 8?
Probably around 35 to 40.
About almost 50. So I got over 50 parks in green space, the most walkable. I understand green space, but I also understand that we got so many parks in District 3 need to be improved. Some do not have water fountains. Some do not have trails. Some have not been maintained for many, many years. So We're trying to have developers to do green space, but we had not taken care of our own parts. So I have a problem with that also, especially in my district. You know, I can't speak at the other 13 districts, but I'm looking at District 14, over 53 parts there throughout the city, you know, in District 8. Question, when we established these fees with the developers, I remember when I grew up, you know, in the project, Mill Place, Wahoo Park, almost every public housing had parts around, you know, the apartments. They did have them many, many years ago, back in the 60s. And it took so long, thank you, Ms. Grayson, to bring that up, but we did have parts when we did public housing, affordable housing. So I don't want to punish the developer, you know, with affordable housing. And that's a big concern, you know. You're going to punish the deal and I can't get affordable units because that's an additional fee. So we definitely look at that as main concern. Our concern, we're talking about park land dedication or whatever, I need to figure out how the park department and the city manager work a budget, how we can maintain our parks now. We need to maintain our park now. And when people who cannot afford housing, they need to go to parks. They need to have a water fountain at a park, a restroom or something, that those 53 parks that I got in District 8, we don't have that. You know, we've been asking for many parks. Some districts do not have that many parks, but District 8 has over 53 parks, and we're not maintaining that. And so now we're trying to penalize the developer to get more green space and going to take away affordable housing, but also we're trying to make sure that people, the developer who going to do the green space, trees that they are doing to pay a fee, the resident who going to move into that project or that apartment, whatever, is going to pay a fee, and they cannot afford to pay the rent. I mean, that's a big concern. And I don't know, the question is to you, Mr. City Manager, that when it came to you, is there any reason why we did not bring this up when we were doing our policy for the housing? I mean, because I think kind of run along affordability with affordable units. And since this did come up, how soon will our task force look at this, how we would punish the affordable units that are going into the development?
Thank you, Councilman. As a matter of fact, this was a topic of discussion amongst staff during the development of this particular ordinance as it relates to affordable housing, particularly in the southern part of Dallas. I do believe in the current housing policy that you adopted, and in some brief discussion, as we lay out the final versions of whatever ordinance has come through, I think Raquel had mentioned during the discussion there were some things that we needed to coordinate with sustainable development in the development of these policies once they were fully formed that would include certain waivers and adjustments for affordable housing that were consistent and which wouldn't impact more negatively any affordable housing. So it has already been contemplated as this evolves, this particular ordinance, as well as when we come back, as we laid out a schedule for other ordinances associated with this policy, that those things would be incorporated for council consideration to adjust and provide for waivers for certain levels of projects in TIF areas or other emerging markets or redevelopment areas. So it is provided for and was discussed. And part of the reason why this particular briefing actually was delayed so that we could better understand the housing policy so that as this continues forward, they will be merged together to have the broader discussion.
With that said, talk to me about the fees downtown in Zone 7 versus the fees outside of there. There may be the real estate property values more expensive. How do we balance that out throughout the citywide?
Well, the fees are uniform throughout the city, so we did not want to any inequities in the fees from one part of town to another, and they're all based on the $1.75 per square foot of land value for for dedication.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kingston.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Plano has a parkland dedication ordinance as well?
Yes, sir.
What acquisition price per square foot do they target?
I don't have the answer to that, but we can get it for you.
What is the fee that they charge? Do you know that more generally? Higher or lower than what you're proposing?
I would have to check that. We included a lot of benchmarking stuff in the appendix, but I did not include Plano, but I can certainly get you that information.
Well, my question is it's clear that the parkland dedication ordinance that they passed has completely prevented them from developing any business in the city of Plano, right? No corporate relocations. It's just business unfriendly up there, isn't it?
Yes.
I want to congratulate both of you, Mr. Winters and Mr. O'Connor. I think that I definitely agree with Ms. Grayson. You all were extremely responsive to comments from me, from the community, from the committee, and what you have proposed. My only criticism is I don't think it's aggressive enough, and I would like for this to be brought back within a reasonable period of time to see how it's working so that we can reassess. I'm worried that the target land acquisition price that you have expressed is very low.
It is.
And will not result in enough parkland being dedicated. I also am not a fan of exempting property that is not increasing density. Legally, there's no reason we have to do that, I don't think. The areas of town showed on the map that are not meeting the Trust for Public Lands 10-minute walk threshold, a lot of those are R75 or even less dense single-family neighborhoods. And there's, essentially we built out the city without thinking adequately about parks, and there's no reason we have to keep doing that because we did it in the past. So I would love to bring this thing back and see how it's working, make a data based decision on how we operate our parkland dedication, but look at making it more aggressive if it's appropriate. The use of the money from the downtown zone to fund things around the city is exactly what I asked y'all to do, and I think it's really healthy. I mean, I think that being able to use the money that's generated from some of our hottest development areas to benefit parks for people who don't have heavy development in their neighborhoods is, I just think that that's exactly what we ought to do. I know there are some legal restrictions on that, and I really appreciate the way that you address that. That's very innovative thinking. And that's starting to become a hallmark of the way this management runs, is that it might bonk its head on something, but then it finds a way to get to the goal, even if there's an obstacle, and I really appreciate that. I want to express one issue that I see raised in the comments that are in the appendix that you all provided and that have been expressed around this horseshoe. An exemption, Mr. Broadnax, or a relaxation of this policy for the provision of affordable housing is one of the most horrible ideas I've ever heard in my life. It is an expression of an idea that can be more easily framed as poor people don't need parks as much as wealthy people do. And I will never support any form of relaxation of this development fee for some developer being so kind as to allow poor people in their development. Let's all back away from that thought as quickly as we can so that it doesn't splash on us more. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Felder.
Yes. So questions and concerns that I have Willis, the Parks Department has the power of eminent domain. Is that correct? Eminent domain.
Yes, sir. The city and the department do. Yes,
okay.
Sir.
So that is a concern that I have. So talk to me about when and how eminent domain would be used in this process.
Certainly. So we would identify parkland regardless of the funding source. So it could be fees from the dedication ordinance or bonds in the capital bond program funded for land acquisition. We do an analysis. We are always looking for property in certain situations for various park facilities, even service centers and neighborhood parks. So we identify land. We approach the owner to see if they're interested in selling. If yes, then that moves forward. If no, we then have to make a determination of whether we want to, how important that land is for our needs. We would go to the park board and ask their permission to acquire the land using the eminent domain if necessary. And then that also goes to city council to seek your authorization before we utilize it. And then with eminent domain, usually an offer is made based on one or more appraisals, and either the owner would accept it, or if he doesn't, it goes to commissioner's court, and usually the cost is, our experience over a long period of time, is cost is split down the middle.
So when we talk about development, and we're looking at the new housing policy, what area of town would you say that most of the development is going to occur?
I'm not. Don't think I can answer that question. That would need to be somebody else.
The question is, where do we anticipate future development, particularly
most of it?
I think in the areas that are currently greenfields that would accommodate new development would be the southern sector. However, at the same time, in terms of multifamily, I think there's a lot of infill development that we'll continue to see throughout the city.
Okay. So that's my concern. I represent District 7. During the housing policy, I continue to stress that only 28% home ownership, 72% investor-owned property. To me, that frightens the community. It concerns me as a representative of that district, my district. How many parks are in District 7?
It's probably, I don't have the exact figure, it's probably over 40 parks.
Over 40 parks. Okay. So do you think that there's a need for more parks in District 7?
Well, I would go to the park desert map that we looked at earlier and can analyze the areas.
Can we pull it up? Let's pull it up.
Geographically, we can see the areas that currently do not fall within a 10-minute walk of a park.
All right, so I'm used to seeing council districts, so tell me where we are in District 7. What zone is that in according to your map?
So 7 would be kind of sort of in this area there.
Looks like a desert, right?
Well, no, actually, 7 this map looks fairly good.
Fairly good. Okay, great. That's even better. So does the park board weigh in on this particular situation?
Well, the park board has passed a resolution in full support of the ordinance, so they're strongly behind it.
Right.
And then as we bring property forward to them for acquisition, they would approve the acquisition before it moves to city council.
Okay. So just to wrap up, again, my concern is again, the use of eminent domain in this process. And so I want to take another look at that. I want you guys to take another look at that. And finally, you mentioned that other municipalities are using this. Can you tell me about those? What municipalities are using this?
Yes, sir. So if you'll look in the appendix on starting on page 33, and we can go to that, maybe go there. You can see, for example, now keep in mind the proposed development fee for Dallas for single-family residentials at $1,165. So you can see Arlington is $1,257, Colleyville $1,800, Frisco $1,560, mm-hmm. Fort Worth it's not quite apples to apples, Grapevine $1,400, Lancaster has a higher park development fee than what we're proposing. They're at $1,400. We're again at $1,165. And those are just some examples. So, again, we fall, I mean, McKinney, not quite apples to apples, but we fall at the lower end of the benchmarking analysis in comparison with other cities. Okay.
All right, so that's really all I have to say. I mean, I've heard from District 7 constituents, and the concern is eminent domain. So I would ask that you take a look at that. Thank you.
Ms. Medrano.
Thank you, Mayor. Page 23, just for the record, the downtown zone, I know you're using downtown 360, and I know you have the Cedars lumped in there. How can we, you know, downtown has parks for downtown. Cedars has me and their residents. So I want to know how the distribution of the money is going to be, because we're going to see significant development in the Cedars. We're seeing it now, and we haven't had a park for decades. And I know that you know, I put some money in there for the bond program we're working with, yeah, with you guys, but how can we,
council member,
feel
I think,
comfortable knowing that being a part of the downtown, yeah, zone, that we're going to get our share of the
I think land acquisition in the downtown zone is the highest priority, okay, before. And we need to address those needs, especially in the Cedars, where the only park is, as you know, Dallas Heritage Village. Cedars is rapidly developing. It's the next uptown in St. Thomas, and we don't want to make the mistakes the city has made in those two neighborhoods, where there are virtually no parks or green space. So our highest priorities is buying land in the Cedars. We've got some bond money available to do that, but I think we've got to also utilize revenues from this downtown zone 7 to address those needs. I really don't see, even though there's going to be a lot of units built in downtown and Victory, we've got a 39-story residential tower announced in Victory. We don't need parkland there. We need it in other net parts. So that's why we created this downtown 7, so that park dedication fees from these big projects can be spent where they're needed in the Cedars or in Deep Ellum or in, well, there's no land in St. Thomas. It's too late. Mm-hmm. It's probably too late in Uptown. And only after we've addressed those needs would we begin to look at, as downtown continues to grow, would we begin to look at this idea of implementing the citywide trail network. Okay. And allowing some of that money that the funds to flow out, sort of like a, you know, in the blood vessels and arteries of the trail system.
So also, would this be able to enhance the Dallas Heritage Village? Because I know they're always needing to repair the houses that they have there, and to make the park,
yeah,
improvement amenities. So that includes that as well, right?
Yes. So, yes, sir, the funds, the development, the parkland dedication ordinance fees, again, comprises of either a land dedication or a fee in lieu of land dedication and park development fees component. So there is money to develop the parks.
Okay. That's what I need to know. Thank you.
Mr. Callahan.
Yeah. Thank you, Mayor. I generally like the idea, and I've certainly followed along and kind of connected all the dots, and it may be the most affordable methodology, but I always want to err on the side of caution since I'm in the real estate industry, have been for a long time, and obviously this is another expense, you know, to that industry, and just take you, t- down the kind of a primrose path of expanse. You've got your property taxes and personal property taxes. You've got property insurance and land acquisition costs and survey costs and platting fees, and you got mortgage interest. You have planning costs, zoning, SUP costs, you know, with planners. You got the tree ordinance issues that we deal with. ISWM or the stormwater issues. You got your building cost, and then some of these properties are in TIFs, some are in PIDs, so they're self-assessing themselves. You've got then you add the parkland dedication onto that, and then you got in many cases a homeowner or condo association fees. You got parking fees if you're downtown or in some of the areas close to downtown. You've got obviously maintenance cost, and then you've got affordable housing considerations, which we've got to deal with if we're ever going to meet those obligations. Oh, and you've got developers' profit. At the end of all that, hey, they want to make a living. So that's all stacked on top, and so it really, in essence, discourages development in the southern half because there's less disposable income, less spending money. So we run the risk of leaving those green fields, as David talked about, fallow if you simply don't have enough money to pay for the engine to be able to do that. So I am a realist, but I'm also a pragmatist at the same time. But I'm just very concerned about the overheating or overburdening the industry because you're just piling on more and more fees and more cost. And property taxes have increased every year since I've been here on council for 5 years. So, but again, if we could build, I think Mr. Atkins brought up a very good point about the affordable component, perhaps waiver offsets that Mr. Broadnax was talking about certainly would be the appropriate measure, I think, to be able to do that. So that's going to require a fix. That might be one of the first orders of business once we get into the revisiting this a year from now. But I simply think that we've got to if we're going to encourage affordable housing. Otherwise, people are just going to dodge that, or they're going to go to the suburbs. They're just going to say, hey, it's just too much trouble to work in Dallas. It's just one more thing, and I know other communities, other cities have those, but they don't have the sheer land cost that Dallas has. The land cost, even in my area, is really going way up. Who would have thought just, a few years ago now that Ross Avenue, $50, $60, square foot. And then the Cedars, land cost are climbing. So we don't want to kill the goose to lay the golden egg. We don't want to go backwards. We want Dallas to continue to flourish and to grow. I do think that what Mr. Marquis said was spot on, though. If you don't do this, then you're looking at a 5-year campaign with a bond. And Willis, you're always waiting to have enough money to buy more parkland. And two things happen when you wait: there the land supply diminishes, and also the cost becomes exacerbated because of the sheer demand over time. So all these are difficult questions that have to be answered, and we've got to get this right. And it's unfortunate timing. I wish we'd have done it 10 or 20 years ago. Then we wouldn't have to be dealing with it all at the same time when we're looking at the tree ordinance, revisiting that and some of the other things. So I'm going to listen and continue to listen to the discussion, and hopefully we can get this right. I know we've looked at it, and I think you guys have done a great job in lieu of all the other challenges that we face, but just simply want us to be cautious as we go forward because, there's only so much you can afford. I guess the last thing I would say on the subject is it sometimes in the South forces us to build a less than adequate product, because you can't afford the development costs once everything else is added in. We also would love to have brick veneer houses all the way around. We don't want just brick fascia and then wood around or some other cheap product, or yellow pine fences. We'd like to go first class like the rest of the city, but sometimes you dumb it down to be able to make the payments to make it affordable. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Gates.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you for all the hard work that went into bringing this forward to us. I'm supportive of the ordinance. I do have, and I think we need to put it in place, I think we're going to have to really evaluate the effectiveness of it. I understand the, you know, making the fees competitive, but I have concerns at, you know, in areas that the land is so expensive, they're going to do the they're going to pay the fee, and then we're not going to be able to acquire land in those areas, in some of the zones that the price per foot. Did you say that you're purchasing land currently for $30 a foot?
Yes, ma'am.
And
that's north of LBJ.
Yeah, and so, yeah, and in the zone, I think it's zone six is.
Yes.
In that area.
Yes.
So it would take a long time to be able to, you know, if we have redevelopment in that area, to be able to actually purchase land. What, and you said you, that, what's the time frame that if it doesn't, if you don't, is it 10 years you're giving yourself? So what would be the solution if you don't have enough money at 10 years to purchase
land?
Well,
we would, I think, ensure that the we would spend the money somehow in 10 years, either on parkland acquisition or parkland development. We feel like we will be able to spend, you know, maybe by pairing the money if we are short on a budget, maybe pairing it with bond funds or with private funds to either buy land or develop or enhance existing park development.
Okay.
Because if we don't, we'd have to return it at the end of 10 years if it's unspent.
Okay. Because I just think in these zones when the price, you know, we're pricing it at $1.75 a foot, and we already know today it's costing us in that zone. So, and I think the encouragement for them, for the developer themselves to buy enough land to meet the requirement is, you know, it's cheaper for them to pay the fee.
It is.
So they're probably not going to be
You're
able
right.
to do that.
Yeah.
With regarding to the discussion on exemptions, you know, I know we are addressed with this. We are trying to create housing for our current residents. That's how we came up with the number of units that we needed regarding our housing policy. I think we all need to be conscious around this horseshoe that the suburban cities are not doing that. They're trying to create housing for 350,000 and above homes. They're not looking to serve a population that currently exists. They're trying to attract a new population. We are, I think, a lot more conscious around this horseshoe that we want to take care of our residents. We want to lift them up through workforce, and we want to give them affordable housing. So with that, we've got to be conscious that when we're building housing that we are making it viable for developers to come in. And with that being said, though, when we do that, we need to make sure that in these communities they have access to public space and public parks. I mean, we have neighborhoods currently. I have Vickery Meadow, which is affordable, and I'm trying to, you know, help the residents that are currently there, but they don't have access to park space because it was developed out without any parks. So it's a balance. We've got to start somewhere. That's why I think you've got to keep these fees reasonable so we can encourage redevelopment or new development. At the same time, you know, if we looked at any type of exemptions, we don't want to limit the access to parks. So if there's a way to tie an exemption, if there's an existing park, if you're in areas that do have, you know, access, then that might be an option, but not in new areas or in particularly in Vickery Meadow is a concern of mine. And then could you explain to me, so that's kind of my editorial comment regarding, but I think we need to start, we need to get this in place, and then we got to evaluate how it's affecting our ability to provide the units that we're trying to provide, and then also if it's giving us access and ability to build parks, and then if it's not, we'll have to look at ways to do that. The Chapter 245, the local government code, how is that going to be impacting this ordinance?
Chapter 245 basically is a vesting statute that, you know, if you've begun a project at a certain period of time, then you're subject to the rules that were in place when you began that project. So that's really just a comment that we're going to have to recognize and comply with state law. So if somebody came in with a preliminary plat a year ago, we adopt this ordinance, then they're playing by the rules that were in place a year ago under state law.
Okay, so but it's a state law. It's not.
Yes,
but we're making sure that this ordinance is compliant with
absolutely
state law.
Absolutely, we have to. Yes, ma'am.
Right. Okay. All right. Those are my questions and comments now. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Caraway.
Thank you, Mayor. You know, I don't know if you have watched this television commercial about this mattress, that when you lay on this mattress, you know, it adjusts your body, however it is, and it's kind of all like this. That's kind of what we're dealing with here in the city, is that mattress. All of it is not level. It's not all even. And we have to make sure that we take care of the mattress. Dallas is the mattress. So there are going to be different types of things that are going to be needed in certain areas of our city that's unlike other parts. If we're going to address it, then we have to have the proper accommodations, as we're talking about, and I agree with Mr. Callahan. I agree with Mr. Atkins. I agree with Ms. Gates with the comments that we've made, that they've said, and I don't have to repeat them, as relate to we can't overlook and apply without the proper tools to be able to allow development and opportunities in other areas. So sometimes you may have to have some type of extension or something to benefit a particular area and a particular project. How many parks do I have in District 4? That seems to be a popular question.
It's probably in the 30 to 40 range.
Yes, we all have the same amount. And then let me just quickly end this. At Eloise Lundy, how does this, what we're talking about, affect Eloise Lundy with that little house that we're trying to acquire for the expansion of Eloise Lundy for more parking? In the bottom.
Yeah, so if, let's say that there is a residential development in District 4.
Right.
That has parkland dedication fees. The developer, A, has an option. They could buy that property for us to meet his parkland dedication requirements, or pay a fee in lieu of dedication to us that we could then use that money to buy that lot. That would be the most direct impact.
Okay. In the 10-year plan that you all are talking about, that we're talking about today, what does that do to the Cedar Crest Golf Course and the project we have been talking about for many years on Ozona, closing
yes,
down Ozona,
so,
making yeah. Illinois as the gateway
yeah.
To southern Dallas.
Yeah. So this is Park Dedication Zone 3,
okay.
Which is South Central. Okay. Any project, any residential project, multifamily, single family, or hotel
okay.
that is built in Zone 3 would pay fees into the park dedication account, and we could utilize those fees, those revenues, to buy land anywhere in that zone, including the two examples that you've just listed, one by on a zone near Cedar Crest, the other by Eloise Lundy.
Okay, now yes, let's go to my last one. Let's go to the 11th Street at the foot of the bridge.
Yes, sir.
At Cedar Crest.
Yes, sir.
The senior park.
Yes.
That I'm asking you all to design and take a look, that we already have that land.
Yes, sir.
How's that?
So same thing. Assuming that there's no land no acquisition required on that site,
mm-hmm.
we could use these fees from Zone 3
mm-hmm.
to build the park, to develop the park on that site for as a senior park.
Now, I know you're saying we could use those. Now, when are we going to do it for District 4 for those projects? Is there a timeline? Is there a priority list? Are we on the list? Are those projects a priority that we've been waiting on for 20 years?
Well, the projects that you've mentioned, there's two funding sources. One, well, probably more than two, but either capital bonds, which we know that there you did include some money, discretionary funds for land acquisition in Council District 4.
Okay.
So that is one source.
Good.
The other source would be any parkland dedication fees amassed in this Zone 3. And we would identify the priorities, working with the political leaders to identify the priorities for the expenditure of those funds.
All right. And lastly, I want to thank you all for your hard work, Ms. Grayson. Thank you for your hard work to bring this to us today and to the city manager. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kleinman.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you, Willis, Ryan, David, for this presentation. I have a couple of questions about the recommended land dedication and the related fee. Kind of piggybacking on Mrs. Gates' comments, is the fee the same throughout the city, regardless of where the development goes?
Yes, sir.
So did y'all consider having the fee somehow tied to the underlying property value of the property that was being developed?
That that concept came up, absolutely, over the course of this process, particularly with the stakeholder roundtables that we held. And really just the fact of the matter is, if you're trying to really tie it to the true value of the land, you would have a fee structure that in some parts of town would be really, really high. So the consensus of the developer and park advocate roundtable was to let's try to get some uniformity here. Let's try to get some standards that can be applied to the entire city so that you're not creating equity issues throughout the system.
So can we look at the park desert map, please? And do you think that access to parkland is equitably distributed around the city?
No, not at all.
Okay. So, and in the zones where, just kind of generally, in the zones where property is expensive, would you say there are more access to parkland or less access to parkland? Okay, my district, Ms. Grayson's district, Ms. Gates' district.
Well, I'm looking at this.
Let's just look at your park district 6. Yeah. Would you say that area has more access to parkland or less access to parkland than, let's say, districts 5, 1, 7, 2, 3, and 4?
I'd say based on the proportion of colored to yellow background, I'd say there's less access.
Okay, so that would be an area we are actually trying to create access, correct?
Yes.
But our policy does not generate nearly enough funds to allow acquisition in those areas. So how does it work?
There would not be a lot of revenues to buy parkland in District 6.
Yeah, so I mean, I understand the interest in making Dallas residents more access to parkland. I think that's a generally good concept. But when we look at the model you put in place and overlay it with the dedication zones, it doesn't line up. It doesn't, to me, it doesn't seem to achieve the goals of acquiring, at least in North Dallas, acquiring parkland in the place that has some of the biggest inequitable parkland in the city. I mean, if we look in Southern Dallas has, what do you think, about 60, 70% of the parkland of the city of Dallas, and Northern Dallas maybe 30% of the parkland of the city of Dallas. That's not equitable. And so I'm struggling with how to balance that out because I just don't see I don't see in more expensive areas developers dedicating land. I see them buying their way out.
Yeah.
But those are the areas where we need it the most. And that's a concern of mine. The other thing I don't see anywhere in this presentation, and I realize it's coming just on the heels of our adoption of the housing policy, but the thing that's driving our housing policy in the city of Dallas is this MVA, the market value analysis. And I really got to believe there should be some overlap or overlay or something that says if we're trying to create opportunity zones in housing, how can park dedication help drive that? So I would like to see, and trust me, you're not the only department I've complained to about this, but this is that housing policy is probably the most important thing I think this council has done since I've been on the council. And so if that's driving our city, we should, everything we're doing, drive towards the goal of accomplishing what that housing policy wants to do. So sometime between now and when we vote on this, I would like to maybe you can meet with the housing folks or the economic development folks and figure out how do these things overlay. And you may just actually find that they overlay really nicely. But maybe there are also some things where either in the housing policy or in the parkland dedication policy, you can give some bonuses in those opportunity zones so that people that when we put parks in opportunity zones, so we put housing opportunity zones and parks in opportunity zones, somehow that benefits the developer, encourages them to do those there, and help us do that. Because what I'm concerned about is that the places that you're seeing some of the most need, especially in North Dallas, by virtue of the fact that the property is expensive, that's why we don't have parks in the first place. And so I'm hoping we can figure out some adjustments in there. Explain to me why this is not would not be considered like a taking if we're going to actually change our ordinances with regards to requiring developers to do something they didn't have to do in the past.
Well, we're all looking back and forth. And I would defer to probably to the city attorney's office, since that's more or less a legal question. But we believe it's structured in a manner where it's a dedication to meet the requirements of the development that's occurring.
Okay, so because the new development creates more demand for parkland?
Yes, sir.
In our city, and therefore we, because of that. Okay, and then is there any... when people come for zoning changes and requests, is there any tie to this parkland dedication where we can give bonuses or anything like that for zoning if they agree to provide parkland, kind of like we talked about inclusionary zoning on housing?
I think we've already done that in many PDs, certainly with open space requirements in return for certain increases in density. Okay. There's nothing that would preclude that, but I think we just need to be careful that we're not impacting.
And which takes precedence, the requirement in the PD or the citywide ordinance?
Unless the PD would exempt the citywide application, my hope would be that whatever's incorporated in the PD would mirror exactly what would be required or be greater than what would be required by the parkland dedication.
It'll be the greater of the two.
Okay. Yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Narvaez.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. First, I want to thank Ms. Grayson for your leadership on this. I know it's been many years, but I think we're getting really close, and I'm fairly happy with most of it, so the vast majority of it. Mr. Willis, Ryan, and David, thank you also for all your hard work and dedication to this and bringing it together and bringing all different folks together, not just doing it on your own, but actually going out into the community and bringing the developers and, you know, really having a good roundtable of different ideas. I think we're seeing it in here. And then also, you know, I know I had a couple of concerns last time we went through this, and I want to thank you all for pulling that together. I think we really have a much more equitable policy here that we can use and people can be proud of across the entire city. My one question is for you, Mr. Kossum. There was a fee study done because I was hearing a lot of kind of issues with the fees. Can you tell me where we ranked in this fee study as far as the fees that we're thinking about imposing?
Sure. We're kind of in the preliminary process of assembling that information, but we certainly look to be competitive today in our fees and would be competitive still with any adoption that's proposed is what our preliminary look at that appears.
Other cities around us are doing the same exact type of
that is exactly correct.
Fees, they're adding these fees in. So we're the only city right now not doing this, and our parks are starting to fall behind.
because of not having a park dedication policy.
I think that's what drove this proposal, yes, sir.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Carraway.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. And I'm just kind of curious about one thing that we would see it, and I'm not trying to slap at anybody at all. But when you look at the map and you go back to district, the area of six, how we don't have enough, there is not enough space, and you have so much space here in the southern part, is because our housing is different. When you look at some of those houses, I'm not trying to start nothing, y'all, I'm just telling you the truth. Some of the houses, y'all live in a park. When you look at the big house, you know, that was built, that y'all chose to live, you put all them big houses there, and you look at Mr. Perot's house, I'm not trying to put him under the bus, and you look at Jerry Jones' house, I'm not trying to put him under the bus, but look how much acreage they got. And so let's be real about it. I mean, they got big houses, big yards, swimming pools, and all of that. They basically live on a park. But and I'm going to be very supportive of trying to create and find ways to increase it. But I don't want us to just take a look and say, well, you know, we have so many parks over the southern sector. Yeah, we got them because we had the land to have them. And you fly on Southwest of American and you fly over north, that's all you see is swimming pools in the backyard. It's the reason that we don't have those swimming pools when you come into the south. So I just want to make it real clear that it's compacted because of the big giant houses that folks chose to build, that took up the land, that now we're trying to figure out where we can go and find some park. We're going to find some park. I'm with that. But I just want to make that clear so y'all can understand that it's not Southern Dallas is the fault, you know. And when we get to the tree thing, we're going to have some discussions about that. I support it all, but I just want to be fair with it so folks understand that we don't have them big old houses with 30 acres. Our houses are like on an acre, maybe, if that. And so y'all just take that under consideration. Y'all build some big houses.
Thank you. Mr. McGue hasn't spoken, so. But
thank you, Mr. Mayor. So I voiced some of these concerns in committee, so I wasn't going to bring it up again. But in light of some of the comments, yes, District 10 is the area that has the most highest need for parks. And it following the lines of Mr. Kleinman, I'm not sure how this policy really helps us. And so it's something I've gotten to the point of where I think it's the right thing for the city, but it's a struggle for these areas. And in response to the last comment, the areas that have the highest need in my district are pretty much all apartments. And it's not people with big yards and parks that they live in. It's places where when I sit and talk to the kids in those communities, their ask is, can we just get a swing set? They're not playing in their backyards. And so I think when we look at all these policies, we've got to figure out a way to figure out where are the biggest needs, whether it's yellow areas in the MVA or whatever it is, and we've all got to come around and focus on those areas of need. And so it's going to be interesting watching it go forward. I hope it's something that we can get some actual resources to these areas. I don't know if we're doing it the right way. I think y'all put a lot of effort and energy into trying to do so. I appreciate our park board and our park board rep and certainly your leadership, Ms. Grayson, to get us to this place. But we got a lot of work to do to get green space in the areas where we need it. With the housing policy, I think I'll say it. I said it then. I'll say it again. We've got to start aligning our mixed income and our affordable housing around the good schools and around the green space and the amenities, because that's what builds up a neighborhood. We can't just keep spreading it all around. And I'm hoping that these things start coming together, as Mr. Kleinman said, that we can end up with some really unique opportunities. But we've got a lot of work to do. Appreciate it, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Ms. Grayson.
Thank you, Mayor. I did want to say to Mr. Carraway that, you know, I can't go roaming around Mr. Perot's backyard. So that doesn't help me in Far North Dallas. Pardon? What'd you say, Rick? I haven't asked, but, you know, you think I would start a trend maybe that, you know, we could. So I think it's a good idea that we bring this back, but in all the discussion, would we bring it back for review in a year or 3 years or 5 years? Because I'm thinking that Mr. Kleinman made some good points. If the areas that need parks the most are the most expensive areas, we're never going to accumulate enough money to actually get some green space. So maybe when we bring it back 1 year, 3 years, 5 years, we could look at that. And we could say, okay, if it costs more in the north and the developer has to pay higher fees, maybe he would choose to do a project in the southern part of the city where the fees are lower and where we're trying to encourage development. Maybe we look at that concept in the period of time where we would be bringing it back, be it 1 year, 3 years, 5 years. But if we don't move forward with it now, then I think we're never going to do it again for years and years and years. So I think we need to move forward with the parkland dedication ordinance now, figure a time in which we're going to bring it back, and then look at that idea about how maybe you accumulate enough dollars. And, again, maybe it would urge a developer or push a developer toward a southern Dallas project versus a northern Dallas project, and that would be a goal that we want. So I also wanted to say, and I'm sorry, Mr. Hochberg, I hope I didn't murder his name. I'm sorry he left. He's the chair of UFAC, Urban Forestry Advisory Committee, and I wanted to give them kudos because they have kind of labored at City Hall a little bit anonymously. I'm not sure everybody's aware of all the good work that they do. They pushed to get us an urban forester, and they have pushed on this ordinance. They pushed and been involved in the tree ordinance amendments that are coming forward. And so I just wanted to recognize them and say they do a lot of good work, and I'm not sure everybody's aware of it. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Kleinman.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have to agree with Ms. Grayson that while it may not be perfect, I'm very interested in seeing the ordinance move forward. I would like to see, as another overlay, maybe just by these dedication districts' densities, because one thing I don't think the park score takes into account is the density of a neighborhood. It's just distance from a park. And I think when we look at, for example, your District 6 densities, where probably more than 50% of the residents live in multifamily, you will find that the number of people that don't have adjacency to parks is even higher than a lot of these other districts. So just a simple overlay that says each one of these districts has such density, and I think that would even further the argument for making sure that that we have enough money to acquire parkland in the place where the people are living, which unfortunately tends to be expensive areas. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Callahan.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor, for round two. I'm going to be generally in favor of it. I do want to kind of poll some of those that are in my industry one more time just to make sure that they're generally satisfied. But I do hope that we'll come back and revisit this in a year just to kind of see, you know, where it's going, what kind of impacts that it's having. I think those that would be probably against this ordinance, they're going to have to look at the fact that that there's going to be higher taxes to pay back bond debt and so forth for us to acquire property. So there's really no free ride here. It's one way or the other. And it really could be more expensive if we do the bond, because the next bond's 2022, then projecting forward 2027. What is land cost, and will there be available supply in those timelines? Doubtful. So we have to make a decision on this, and I think probably presently is probably the right way to do that. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody that's worked hard on this, Mr. Winters, Mr. Cosson, Ms. Grayson, everybody, the team. I want to thank Bobby Atahi. I know he's very passionate about this, and he's said that we need to get this going, so I appreciate that work. Mr. Cosson, Ms. Brodnick isn't here, so I'll just say, Mr. Kleinman said 2 weeks ago every time, and I think it was a great idea, so we can take a vote and say it's not a good idea, but that every time we show a map for the city of Dallas, we're going to put the MVA over it, okay? Every time, and say, is this coming together? Is this merging, or do we have separate plans? So hopefully everyone throughout the city, as they're working on their projects, go from the NBA and say, how does this help turn some areas that are not those bright blues, you know, that color? That's the whole purpose of what we're doing here. And so I think it's very important. And lastly, I disagree with Mr. Kingston tremendously about affordable housing. It's the most important issue that we've got to do. And I think to characterize anybody's desire to be creative about how we fund affordable housing as not wanting poor people to have parks is just not correct. I believe that everybody in this council wants everybody to have the justice that Mr. Marcus talked about and have the access to green space. In fact, when I look at that map, a lot of folks that are not as privileged as others in this city have more access, and that's good. It's one of the good things we got here. And we also need to be very transparent to the citizens. We will help fund affordable housing. So either we're going to pay more into the affordable housing or less into the affordable housing. Or maybe there's a way that we should be setting up our own fund for parks near affordable housing. We need to have all that, but we've got to make sure when somebody is at the gate to do a serious affordable housing project, we give the city manager all the tools in, that he needs in the box to make those projects happen. We all kind of took an oath to kind of make this affordable housing plan work, and I want to be able to do that. So with that, we will recess at this point, and we'll come back at 1:30. Okay? 11:30 is when the marching starts. Thanks. Good afternoon. We have a quorum, so I will call our city council briefing meeting for May 16th back to order. Welcome, everybody, and we will take our second and last briefing up, item B, and I think, Mr. Kossum, you're leading this one as well.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
Do want to mention I'm joined by Phil Irwin up here, who's our chief arborist for the city and has been an integral part in working on this, as well as many of the stakeholders, some of whom are in the room here with us today, that this has been a long process, and I think we've generated some really great results through this back and forth between the development community, the environmentalists, and others. So with that, I'd just like to go through some quick background of, you know, why we were even talking about landscape and tree conservation. As council has been briefed on numerous times, it's important to mitigate the effect of urban heat islands. We've got to look at air purification, oxygen regeneration, groundwater recharge, stormwater runoff, retardation and filtration, buffering and abatement of noise and glare from adjacent development, aesthetic considerations, and the general benefits to the quality of life for the citizens of Dallas. We have found that viable and flexible solutions are necessary to address issues which have required a variance or exception from the Board of Adjustment. The Board of Adjustment frequently is kind of a measure of how successful our ordinances are and brings to light certain deficiencies within our ordinance. This gives us an opportunity to address some of those. These include extending the time period needed to comply with landscaping and mitigation requirements, addressing utility conflicts when tree plantings conflict with existing utilities, as well as providing alternative mitigation methods. So this really focuses on providing additional alternatives to meet the objectives of the tree preservation and conservation regulations, while allowing for flexibility in the desired development we want to see occur throughout the city in southern Dallas and elsewhere. So the need for amendments, we wanted to incentivize sustainable site development and enhance the streetscape as much as possible. A lot of this has been done through our landscape ordinance amendments as well as our tree ordinance. Local studies, again, have increased awareness of the role trees play relative to air quality that we just previously addressed. Certainly, Council's heard briefings from Texas Tree Foundation on the state of the urban forests and the Heat Island studies. Article 10 was first developed and implemented in 1994. Prior to that, the city had a landscape ordinance, but no real tree conservation measures in place. To that end, Council had established the Urban Forest Advisor Committee back in 2005, which has been an integral part of our process, as well as providing information to Council. Discussion on these amendments really date back to 2009 and 2010. So we've continually worked on these provisions for the last 5 years, basically. Recent history, in February, the Zoning Ordinance Advisory Committee first began deliberating amendments. This just gives you an example of how much this was vetted through the stakeholders. ZOIC had more than 40 meetings in 2 years focused on education, public input, discussion, and evaluation of all options and proposal. Then in February, ZOIC recommended the proposed amendments to the City Plan Commission, and that was by unanimous vote, 7-0. Along with the recommendation that staff pursue development of an ordinance to create a neighborhood forest overlay, which would be applicable to existing single-family development should they choose to have it. After ZOAC consideration, again, this was forwarded to the City Plan Commission. They held 8 different briefings on it and received public input on a couple of different times. In December, CPC recommended approval of the ZOAC proposed amendments, and that was by a vote of 15-0, unanimous decision on that recommendation as well. We then came back before the Quality of Life Arts Culture Committee and briefed them on the proposed amendments. And then one of the concerns expressed at Quality of Life was, could people still work around these provisions by adoption of a planned development district? That was thought could be considered would be to require a 3/4 vote at council if you're waiving the mitigation requirements of Article 10 within a PD. Just quickly, the general structure of Article 10, we have some general provisions, and we have our landscaping provisions, then we go into our tree preservation. Key amendments basically are designed to incentivize sustainable site development by providing greater landscape flexibility and adaptability. We wanted to update established planting and soil conditions in our preservation regulations, provide additional and reasonable means of tree replacement and mitigation, and then also develop a landscape and tree manual. Again, walking through these amendments real quickly, rename it to landscape and tree conservation. It really is conservation efforts as much as preservation efforts. We want to conserve. We don't necessarily need to preserve everything, but we certainly want to conserve. Authorize us to develop the tree manual, landscape and tree manual, and improve the other provisions. In terms of our landscaping, these are pretty straightforward. We're proposing to create three zones, basically, within an area that need to meet our landscape requirements, establishing some point systems. Street buffer zone, residential buffer zone, and interior zone. Again, some of the design options could be accomplished by meeting certain design point criteria. This is just an example of what we mean when we talk about our buffer zones, where the landscape would be emphasized. One of the buffer zones was the streetscape. Again, this is intended to enhance the public realm and provide also a certain amount of tree canopy along that area. Example of just how it addresses the parking lots. Try to reemphasize the introduction of additional shade on some of these concrete areas. Now we get to, I think, what most folks are interested in today. These are the amendments to the tree conservation and what our approach has been. Basically, to balance the desire for new development with the need to conserve and regenerate the urban forest. Tree replacement and mitigations options were based on incentives, reductions, and credits taking into consideration future tree growth. Example of that is previously, if you planted a tree, you just got credit for that number for a 2-inch tree, if that's what you planted. We've enhanced that where you can get greater credit if you have proper soil conditions. Again, flexibility and options for mitigation and greater potential for tree growth and retention then align with the adopted plans and goals that the city has already adopted. So again, emphasis on conservation, renaming that section to urban forest conservation. Time and requirements have been increased for mitigation compliance to coincide with completion of development. This is an example where we have a single family development that might include 50 lots, 60 lots, 100 lots. Rather than having to comply within 6 months, you comply as that development because your credits can be based on some of the tree plantings on each individual lot. Then establish a tree classification system whereby most of the trees that are currently protected are discounted somewhat unless they are significant. And that's really categorized as a post oak greater than 12 inches or any of the oaks or elms, pecans greater than 24 inches. So we're emphasizing the protection of the larger species. Then for other trees that are located in environmental sensitive areas, this could be within a floodplain, within a wetland, on a heavily sloped area. Those would still be mitigated at 1-to-1, but most of the trees would then fall into the class 2, which are now only mitigated at 70%, whereas previously it would have been a 1-to-1 calculation. Class 3 are rated for general condition and growth habits, but this does include things that were previously not protected, such as hackberries and other species like that, but again, at a substantial discounted rate, because the emphasis is on maintaining canopy as much as possible. So everybody, or most folks, felt it was important to include those in the calculation. So what are some of the new mitigation tools we've established? Basically, one is the development impact waiver. You can basically be forgiven for anything within the building footprint when it's developed in a sustainable fashion. So you have to make sure you're doing sustainable development options. This might include ISWIM. It could include sustainable landscape, utilization of drought-tolerant materials. So there's lots of options there. Then you could be forgiven for development within that building footprint and any required parking around that. Transplanted tree credits, basically, again, another option to save trees on the site. You could receive up to 5 inches of credit for each inch of transplanted tree. Now, that will vary depending on the size of the tree that you're transplanting, but it ranges from a 1-to-2 credit to a 1-to-5 credit. Another tool is the forest stand delineation tool. This is something we use in a couple of our options, but one example of that is in establishing an old field site where we can look at the historic function of that particular site, if it was previously agriculture or pasture, and we can show it's only grown up over the past 60 years, you could be forgiven mitigation for anything within that area except for significant trees. Those would be the larger trees. Again, one last credit is receiving up to 12 inches of credit for a tree as small as 2 inches. Now, it depends on whether you're planting a street tree or a site tree. But if you have adequate soil area, we're recognizing the future canopy of that tree. So if you can give me 500 square feet of pervious coverage and have proper soil conditions, you can get 12 times or basically 6 times the credit for a 2-inch tree. So, again, an emphasis on sustainability of that tree. Other mitigation tools and options that are in there, habitat preservation, you get credit for basically a 12-inch tree if you can preserve 1,200 square feet of natural habitat area. Incorporating sustainable development incentives, we've already talked about that a little bit, ISWIM, drought-tolerant plantings, things of that nature. Parkland dedication that we were just briefed on this morning. You could receive credit for every protected tree within the parkland, inch for inch, or basically on the classification system. Tree canopy cover. This is kind of an infill utensil for folks developing an infill lot for single family. If you can keep 40% canopy cover, say I've got 3 trees, I've got 2 live oaks and a large red oak, it's possible I could remove my live oak in the backyard if I want to redevelop that site with a new house and a swimming pool. As long as I maintain that 40% coverage, I'm good. Also within that, there's consideration of unrestricted zone exemption for single family and duplex. Basically, this allows you to remove any trees within your setbacks with the exception. So if my front yard setback is 25 feet, I'd have to mitigate for anything within the front yard. If my side yard setback is 7 feet, I'd have to mitigate anything within that 7-foot setback. But I could remove anything inside of those boundaries. The rear yard, we calculated at 15 feet. Basically, it was an attempt to address the neighboring properties as much as anything else. Whereas my street face, I want to protect and conserve what's there. My side yards, it obviously provides shade and possible canopy for my neighbors. Same thing with the rear yard. So we attempted to develop a pad site, basically, where you would not have to mitigate for trees within that pad site if they were removed. Another proposal is basically to expand the use of the reforestation fund. Primarily today, it can only be used to purchase trees to plant on public property. We have proposed expanding that to create an urban forest master plan, use some of that money for that end, create a staff position to manage the fund, as well as planting and other urban forest education, and then continue to acquire conservation easements or wooded property, which is also a provision in the ordinance today. Another unique aspect, I think many on council have been frustrated from some of our enforcement issues, particularly when we have large areas that have just been scraped overnight. We find out about it after the fact. So how do we come back in and take enforcement action in those situations? The ordinance now specifically calls out this use of the forest stand delineation, where we can look at historic aerials over the site over the previous 20 years, see how the site's developed, and make a calculation as to what that mitigation compensation should be. The other thing we've done is clarify with single-family development when it's still a single-family use. Basically, this provides once we issue a demolition permit, you're responsible for mitigation. Because the provision in the ordinance today where a single-family homeowner is not subject to any tree removal permits, they can remove any tree on their property as long as they're living there and it's occupied as a single-family dwelling. It's once that house is removed, then they need to mitigate for any trees. So this establishes when that clock starts ticking. Once you pull that demolition permit, we consider the house removed and you'd have to mitigate for anything on that site that did not fall within the previous delineated options for single-family infill development. Just to talk about some of the concerns we continue to hear and heard through CPC. One question was something that was also a concern to the quality of life was people utilizing planned development districts to get around some of these provisions, how appropriate that was, how consistent that was. Ultimately, I think the recommendation before you today would be to require a three-quarter vote at council to waive those provisions. Also, a lot of discussion with compliance with HB 7. I think in discussions with our attorneys and staff, we feel like we've been in compliance with HB 7. Our ordinance provisions already allow you to mitigate 100% by planting trees. So that's nothing new to the city of Dallas. Some other cities didn't allow that. You had to pay in the mitigation fund or a forest fund of some type. So we've always allowed 100% credit for planting trees and encourage that as much as we can. The other provisions of HB 7, I think it did change the minimum size that could be mitigated. Our ordinance reflects that. 10 inches on single-family lots is where the protection starts. Other discussion has been our kind of Class C trees, if you will. But again, in order to address the air quality aspects, habitat aspects, and other things, we did feel like it was important to offer some incentive for preserving those areas, even at a steeply discounted rate should you remove them at only 40% of the mitigation. I think folks have generally been supportive of the compromises reached on balancing the need for development and the need to address these environmental concerns that we've been talking about. I just want to kind of reiterate the efforts of all the stakeholders has resulted in what I think is a substantial improvement on the existing provisions of Article 10 and will reduce tree mitigation costs associated with development in Dallas, and that includes tree mitigation costs associated with development in the southern areas of Dallas. And I think virtually everyone agrees with this assessment that it makes the ordinance better. I think there's some concerns out there still that folks would like to see, but I think it's pretty unanimous that this is a good step in making the ordinance better. And just to reiterate and articulate some of those reasons that I think it makes it better, we continue to emphasize the conservation of large quality trees. That's where our emphasis now is, while allowing credit for responsible development of a site, whether it be single family development or whether it be commercial development. Additions to the ordinance that we went over on pages 18 and 19, the legacy tree credit option. That's where you get 12 inches of credit for planting as small as a 2-inch tree. The sustainable development incentives, again, emphasizing smart development of a site and rewarding folks for recognizing that and reducing potential mitigation costs. The incentives for single-family development we talked about, maintain a 40% canopy on the infill development, and also establishing that unrestricted zone where folks could remove trees. And one of the things, I guess, just to further articulate, if we could jump to, I think it's slide 37, to talk about the use of the forest-stand delineation on an old field site. And I apologize, that particular page number is not on that slide, but this is the slide. So when we talk about an old field development, this would be a site that potentially had been historically agricultural or just historically pasture area. So what we can do is try to delineate that area. Now here you see a kind of riparian area that's probably got larger trees and probably should remain protected. But the utilization of the forest stand delineation tool, we can kind of assess things. If you could go to the next slide, please. So these are just some historical aerials that we can utilize in determining this. So we can go back to the 50s and see it really was pasture land except for the riparian areas along the creeks. And you can see the way it's matured, some of the influx of the eastern red cedars into the site, and then allow for some forgiveness of that entire area, which I think is reflected on the next slide. Yes. So this would provide the area that would have no mitigation requirement. If we can demonstrate that this was an old fill site, all growth on it, majority of growth on it has occurred in the last 60 years, we can exempt that area from any type of mitigation responsibility. But again, focus on the riparian areas, the creek sides that are going to have the larger, more quality trees. Now, if there was a quality tree, a 24-inch post oak in the middle of that, they'd still need to preserve that or mitigate for it. But all the other trees could be removed without any mitigation worries. So that was just one example I kind of want to point to as the options that have been introduced in this ordinance. And we'd be happy to respond to any questions you have at this point.
Thank you. Ms. Grayson, do you want to say anything? Okay.
Let me just ask my question at the beginning, okay? Especially since we've got our urbanism. Do you have a map of Dallas at all up here in this?
No, sir.
Okay. So tell me where the Trinity Forest is.
Yeah. Sure. The Great Trinity Forest is a pretty wide swath of very heavily treed property, treed land, great examples of heritage-type trees that runs all the way from basically downtown, really starts right around at the edge of Corinth, then expands down towards 45.
Is it clear where the Trinity Forest starts and stops?
I'm going to defer to my arborist on that point.
In some place it appears clear, but then you start approaching some neighborhoods, and then you can start seeing some clear alignments and some roadways and such. But generally, a lot of it is floodplain, and so that's an easy
indicator. I mean, has anybody ever drawn the lines around the Great Trinity Forest?
Yes, there's been a study of the Great Trinity Forest.
So we've got that.
Yes.
All right. And how much of that is private land and how much of it is city land?
I believe the vast majority of it is public land, city land. There are still areas of private property within it.
Okay. Well, I just, as we think through this, I would ask the city council and the city staff to think about how we permanently preserve that area, okay? So we put handcuffs on us and then we never touch the Great Trinity Forest. Okay, and I would love to know what we need to do as a city council to create a city forest that is treated like national forests. because the size and the quality of that is just remarkable. So,
yes, sir.
But I just, maybe you can get me, David, exactly where that is. So,
yes, sir. And we've talked really with Phil and with Parks, with other folks, with the Trinity River folks, trying to figure out, you know, we have some money, obviously, in our mitigation fund. If we need to target it at obtaining some of these properties, I think our other desire is to steer developers to properties that may be worth entering into a conservation easement or dedicated back. So I think these are all options that we're very interested in pursuing. Okay. To make sure we protect
the land. I mean, this is for the whole city, but I think some work, we need to use a scalpel, I guess, around that forest so we do the right thing by development and that forest, but we need to do that work. All right. You done, Ms.
Grayson?
Okay, good.
Okay.
The microphone's yours.
Thank you, Mayor. So we talked about how long it took to do the parkland dedication ordinance. Times 10. I mean, I remember going to a meeting in 2010. Steve Hauser was the chair of UFAC, Urban Forestry Advisory Commission, or group, and we were talking about amendments to the tree ordinance. So that was 8 years ago. So this has been a very long time coming, and I look at it, and I've got questions. I'm sure some of you have questions. It's so complex, though, that I almost hate to ask a question, because it's so balanced, and it seems as though we've got both the environmental community and the developer community agreeing on this, which is almost a miracle, that I just even hesitate to ask a question, but I will. So I just wanted you all, though, to if you would, please appreciate the work that went into this and the amount of time and energy that went into this, and if we mess with it too much, I'm just worried that it'll get out of balance and we'll be back where we were with one side saying this isn't a good ordinance. And right now we've got agreement. Like I said, it's like a miracle. Mayor, do you want me to ask you? Oh, and I wanted to suggest that maybe what we do with the Trinity Forest is have an overlay of some kind in the same way that we have suggested on Quality of Life Committee that there be a neighborhood forest overlay that I believe Mr. Kossum and his group are starting to work on, where communities can by themselves decide whether they want to make their area a forest overlay, and that would help control how you handle trees in that overlay. So maybe we do the same thing with the Trinity Forest. It's just one idea.
Okay.
So could we go, I'm going to start out if it's okay with some
Please.
Questions. Could we go to page 18? Okay, so you have a transplanted tree credit.
Yes, ma'am.
Up to 5 inches credit for each inch of a transplanted protected tree dependent on size of tree. Do we have anything that says that that tree has to live? I mean, you don't want to give somebody 5 inches of credit for every inch of a transplanted tree that dies a year later.
Right, and there would have to be a plan. As we know, particularly the larger species, the larger trees, are very difficult to ultimately maintain unless and put in the most proper conditions. I don't, Phil, would you like to address that a little?
Yeah, if we put in certain standards that have to be applied to the building official, that basically we have to see what the process is that they're doing the transplant in. In other words, they're not going out with just a bunch of shovels, digging up a tree and hauling it down in the back of a pickup. We are actually looking at professionals doing this process in a set fashion that is recognized nationally as how it should be done.
But it can still die.
It can still die.
It's very hard to transplant trees, especially bigger trees. We should probably have something in here that says if that tree dies, somehow you go back and you have to pay into the forestry fund because that was not a successful transplant. What about a legacy tree? You're going to give people 12 inches of credit for planting a 2-inch tree. That is a like a stick, you know. So that's a very small tree. It may or may not live. What happens if it doesn't live? You're giving them 12 inches of credit.
This is where the city comes in and works in partnership with the developers, in that everyone's taking a risk. And that's why we set the standards so hard for transplanting trees, that they have to meet certain standards. If the tree dies after transplant, it's a loss. but it's one that we recognize because there is substantial cost, if especially if it's a large tree, for the developer to move that tree to another location. For the additional mitigation might be excessive.
So I think the question was on the legacy tree credit specifically. And I think the planting zone itself is designed to help preserve that tree to make sure it can survive. There's soil requirements, 3-foot depth, I believe, minimum 500 square feet, so it should survive. But it's no different than any of our other conservation efforts, really. If a tree planted to meet mitigation requirements dies, if it's not a required tree in either commercial development or single-family tree, then it may not be replaced. But it's the end hope is that I'm going to have a tree planted that has the option of reaching a very mature size and providing the needed canopy we want. So it's a risk.
So it's a risk.
Yes, ma'am.
It's a risk on both sides, especially transplanting a large tree.
On the transplantation.
And the expense involved in that. It's just that I have found over the years that our will to enforce is sadly lacking. And so I just hope that this will also serve as something that really enables us to enforce and that we will enforce, because we have not done a good job of enforcing in the past. Let me ask you about the demo permit. Mm-hmm. So as you explained that once the building, once the demo permit is obtained, mm-hmm. can you go through?
Sure. And just for clarity, right, today under our ordinance and under the proposed ordinance, if I'm a single family homeowner, there is no restriction on me removing a tree on my property, unless I'm in some unique conservation district or PD that might have such a provision. So what we end up in discussions sometimes is when a tree is removed, because there's no way to get around that a smart home, somebody redeveloping a single family lot with a new house, that if he is conscious enough to have that tree removed before the house is removed, there's no penalty. Mm-hmm. And we were asked to look at ways to see if there's any way to protect that. There's nothing that we could come up with enforcement-wise to ensure that. What we could do, though, is at least establish the time when those remaining trees became protected, and there were other offsets available that we previously discussed, and that will be at that demolition permit. It's not going to be a question of, well, the house was still there, I took down the tree. Once you pull that permit, those trees are protected because we know you're scraping it.
Nobody is going to do that. Everybody's smart enough to know that they're going to tell the homeowner, tear down the trees before we buy your property or before we go ahead and pull a demo permit.
It's been an issue on a few occasions. This is our way of addressing a start time. But you're right. Anybody that's familiar with our ordinances is going to do exactly what you described.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for the information.
Thank you. Mr. Carraway.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor. And you asked a very good question, Mayor, about the map. Why would we not have a map that would identify the Trinity Forest in today's presentation?
This was a presentation focused on Article 10. We weren't focusing on any particular part of the city.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm focused on the Trinity Forest,
first of all.
Understood. Let me make a declaration. I have no problem with trees. You all know that. But I do have a concern in a couple of areas.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? As I look at the bridges, and I look at the Sylvan Bridge, the Markenberg Bridge, the Hampton Bridge, the Ron Kirk Bridge, the Corinth Bridge, and I-35, were there ever any trees down there were there ever any trees there? Did we ever cut any trees off in the Trinity Basin at all?
Well, I'm certain that the entire Trinity Basin, where we have the levees, most of the trees have been cut at one point or sometime. But all of those have also grown in that same environment. So they have been growing in those locations.
Okay. Now,
the answer is yes.
Yes.
The answer is kind of yes, because I've been here for 60-some years crossing the bridge, and it was nothing but trees. But all of a sudden now it's clear, and I support that. I'm not having a problem with how you all are doing it. But where my concern comes in with the trees is that we're the only bridge, the Cedar Crest Bridge is the only bridge that does not have a view of downtown. just on the left side of the bridge. If you're going towards South Dallas, on the left side of the bridge, we can't see downtown. What can be done about that? We built we walk out to be able to sit down and enjoy the scenery, but the only scenery is those trees right there. We cannot see downtown. What is the deal with that?
Not sure I'm equipped to respond to it, other than if council makes a determination to remove trees.
I beg your pardon?
I said if council makes a directive to remove trees, then depending on where it's located, right, if it's in some type of easement, then it may be possible to do it without paying mitigation. But like everybody else in the city, we try to follow our rules where they're applicable. But if that is in some type of floodway easement, then that might be a possibility.
So, but if that is the case, then why would we spend $500,000 or $1 million to build the little walkout porch if it was not going to be a visibility point to see the skyline of Dallas?
I'm afraid I'm not equipped to respond to that.
Well, I want somebody to be equipped to respond.
We will meet with the Trinity folks and Parks folks and be able to provide you an answer.
Well, that's not good enough. I'm not going to beat you up.
No, I understand.
I'm not beating you up, but I want to make sure that I'm very much on record that we are the only and the last bridge that is crossed that has a few trees, and that is where the Columbia Packing Company was releasing the pig blood off into the tree. I mean, I'm on point. That is where where they were releasing the pig blood, and it's like the trees over where we are a buffer, so that we cannot see what's going on or enjoy the view. And I have a right to express that.
Yes, sir.
We cannot see the fireworks like everybody else can see them, and I want to know why and what can be done about it. And you, the arborist, and then since I'm going, then who was it and how many trees were cut at Patriots Crossing? Did you give them a permit, Mr. Arborist, to cut them?
Well, there are certain projects that have happened on the Trinity River.
No, I'm at Patriots Crossing on Lancaster now.
Certainly. There are some projects that are governed by Corps of Engineers, some projects governed by some utility projects. So okay. I'm not certain about this particular one.
Well, I would like for you all, Mr. Manager, you all, because I went by there. I love trees. But they cut the trees. And we're cutting them down because Patriots Crossing was full of trees. But one day you go by there and they're cutting trees. The same as they cut trees at I-30 at 67 at Loop 12. What is the situation with that?
Yes, sir. That went into enforcement.
Did y'all give him permission to cut them?
No, we did not. And that was done, and we were able to identify the trees and do enforcement on that. We worked with community prosecution and was able to obtain the mitigation process with them.
So are they up to date with it? What's happening with that?
It is in process. It's not up to date. It's not completed.
It's in process.
Yes, sir.
All right. So this man all of a sudden just decided he won't go cut the trees, and it's in process. And what about I-35 where they just went and started cutting some trees? Do they have permission for cutting the trees?
TxDOT has authorization to remove trees for the projects under their jurisdiction.
No, this is not that. This is another scapping.
Are you referring to Forest Lane and
Elgin? No, I'm talking about the Oak Cliff area where I travel every day.
Yeah.
Here's the only deal. One, and I'll close. I support the tree ordinance. I want y'all to know that. Okay? And I'm an advocate for trees and the oxygen and all of that. But then when certain people can get away with certain things, and then other people cannot get a little something, I ask you guys to just cut a little view. Why is that screen? Give them something to look at. But then it's always a mountain that we have to climb. But then over here, It's just have it your way. It's Burger King. Just have it your way. Cut it. And they cutting them down. And it's happening in my district. And they don't know when I see it, but I do. And they cut the trees over there at Patriots Crossing. And they were just in there just cutting them And we can't even get a development going over there. What were they cutting the trees for, Mr. Oliver? Why were they, if we're not doing a development, what, why are they cutting
the trees? They are not asking permission, is the first point.
It was the city of Dallas. Let me make sure I let you know that.
On Patriots Crossing?
On Patriots Crossing.
Okay.
What I saw, my hand up. That's what I saw.
Okay.
So now, who gave permission for them to go to that cutting on Patriots Crossing?
I do not know. I will strive to find out.
All right. Well, I would like for y'all to find out. Now, Mr. City Manager, a lot of this was before you. I want you to know that. Okay? But at the end of the day, if we're going to be right, and if we're going to love trees, and if we're going to do the right thing, and let's do the right thing all around. Let's not let some people get away with going over scapping things, making ways, not getting permission. I'm not going to begin to talk about something else I want to talk about. But I want y'all to know it's a bigger issue.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Kleiman.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have a question about the presentation. In the past, we've had some challenges using, well, first of all, the reforestation fund.
Yes, sir.
How much money is in there right now?
Probably over $7 million today.
$7 million.
Yes, sir.
And in the past, we've had some problems using it. And do you want to elaborate on why, or do you want me to?
We both can. It's just been identifying appropriate property. It's limited to two things currently in today's ordinance. I can either use it to acquire wooded property, or I can use it to buy trees that then have to be planted on public property.
So
I cannot use it to plant the trees, but I can use it to buy the trees.
What about to water or maintain the trees long term?
Can't use it for that either.
Okay, so we can buy tree stock, but we can't plant it or maintain it long term. So there, okay. Does this change address that?
We've broadened the scope of what it can be utilized for in terms of somebody to manage it, but in terms of clarifying whether it could be used for to provide proper maintenance, I'm going to have to double check my wording, but
or,
I'm being told
installation,
no.
Installation?
No.
Okay, so this fund will continue to grow and not be utilized like it has for how long will we have the reforestation fund?
Well, it originated with the ordinance in 94. It's really gotten a lot of traction since about 98.
So 20 years?
Right. And
20
we have,
years we've accumulated $7 million of money where developers put money into the reforestation fund so that we could actually address this issue of not being able to tap it. And on a little more personal note, in my neighborhood, where the neighborhood agreed to plant and maintain those trees for 2 years under one of these momentum agreements, the nightmare of trying to just acquire like three small oak trees out of it was not at all worth the while when they could have just run down to Home Depot and just bought them. And so if we're gonna have $7 million in a reforestation fund, we got to figure out a way to use it. And all this is great, but you're just going to pile up more money in there that we can't use if we can't use it for planting and if we can't use it for long-term maintenance. So I appreciate that we're trying to figure out a way to preserve trees in our city and create more, reduce the heat islands, but we've still got these funds locked up, and I don't see that changing. So I'd like to see us figure out how to address that.
Okay.
The other thing I want an understanding of, through the previous Article X and now, we talk a lot about caliper, not canopy. And if my high school geometry is right, caliper is about one-third of canopy. So if you take a 10-caliper-inch tree and you replace it with 5 2-caliper-inch trees, you end up with about a third of the canopy you're replacing. Is that about right, somewhere in there?
I would say that it's going to depend on numerous factors.
It's going to be less.
Tree species.
Less.
Right.
So why do we get so hung? Why, if we're trying to create canopy or trying to prevent heat island, why do we let this reduction by a factor of pi happen when we replace the trees? And now I see in here there's a place where we can replace a 12-inch caliper tree with a 2-inch tree?
No.
I mean, come on.
You're getting credit for 12 inches
uh-huh.
by planting a tree in such a fashion that it will grow to that larger tree by proper soil requirements.
In I think, how long? Is there a time frame on that?
No, it's just, again, ensuring that we have the proper planting. The soil conditions and the planting area would help suffice. But let me also state that we have introduced various methods to use canopy as the measure
okay.
to look at that. Because, again, it may be unprotected trees. It may be some less desirable trees, for lack of a better word, that
kind
still form
like
significant,
like a
hackberry or, you know, cottonwood.
In the city of Dallas, another one of those.
Right.
Certain trees we like,
so,
certain trees we don't.
So we're trying to encourage the preservation of canopy by these new tools that give credit for preserving canopy
for whatever,
versus number of trees.
Right, and preserving quality canopy, whatever that might mean or say.
Yes, sir.
Right. Because apparently a 25-year-old hackberry tree is less valuable than a 2-year-old oak tree. Despite the fact a 25-year-old hackberry tree may be providing, you know, 100 square feet of canopy.
Yeah. Probably won't last as long as the oak tree, but yes.
Well, I'm not going to last.
There's been some stubborn hackberries.
I'm not going to last as long as an oak tree either.
I understand.
So, all right. Well, if we can... I guess overall, I like that we're trying to address this, and I know we need to. I'm really disappointed that we really still have no access to that reforestation fund. And the option of using the fund to acquire, I guess if we were acquiring things like parkland in areas where it's needed, but I'm a little reluctant just to say, with all due respect to Mr. Mayor, we're going to expand the Trinity Forest by acquiring some private land adjacent to the Trinity Forest when, I mean, honestly, Mr. Carraway, there are a couple places in North Dallas where I wish we had enough trees to block the view. I mean, let's face it. My part of the world was all cotton fields.
Yes, sir.
Before it developed. There is virtually, if you look at pictures of Preston Hollow in North Dallas from the 50s, like aerials, you will see on all those developments in Preston Hollow one little oak tree planted by developers. And if you look in aerial today, it's all forested. It was all put there by intent and by developers. And so buying up native or regenerative forest in order to protect, I appreciate, but let's get it a way to get it into the neighborhoods. I know that when we redid some new forestation over at Anderson Bonner Park, based on the LBJ Express coming through. Mm-hmm. And so those LBJ Express people, we thought maybe there'd be opportunity to use some of the reforestation funds and stuff like that. And it actually was easier for them just to buy new trees and pay for the irrigation and pay for a maintenance group to go there and put it in there, which was fantastic because now Anderson Bonner is getting really beautifully wooded. And it drives me nuts that we have $7 million sitting in an account. We can't do the same thing on some of the other parks in the city of Dallas.
Okay.
So if we can figure out a way to address that, I would appreciate
it. Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Ms. Gates.
Thank you, Mayor. I don't know if I want to follow Lee today. I know. Grumpy Lee, and then I've got Mr. Clayton over here chiming in my ear, trying to get me in trouble. No. First of all, thanks for all the hard work. All the different stakeholders that contributed, this has been, a labor of love, and I think it is a really good ordinance. I will repeat, Ms. Grayson, that I think we need to be careful because there's so many different considerations and way things. You can't just pull one thing out and decide that you don't want to treat this kind of tree that way or that, or this and that, because there's a lot of compromises in here, and I think we could really mess it up. So I'm going to be supporting it as is. I just have some questions, though. On page 27, and I think you addressed a little bit of this with Ms. Grayson, but I think for the public, this is a concern. If you could just highlight the difference, like today's ordinance related to an acre or less or 2 acres. When someone buys a home and they're going to demolish it, I know we have the time now when the permit's pulled, but they can work around it when the old house is still up. But what else has changed in the way single-family homes are treated?
So previously, once the home was removed, any tree on that site would be protected. So one of the concerns expressed by some in the development community was having a better idea of really what footprint we should be looking at so they could approach their projects. So the ask was really to create a building footprint that if you could put your house in that zone, then you would not have to mitigate for anything within that zone. So what we attempted to do was emphasize the perimeter of the property that most impact the adjacent properties, if you will, and protect vegetation and trees within those areas, and then not have a tree replacement requirement if something is removed within that pad site, for lack of a better description. That area, basically, they would not have to mitigate if they could confine their development to within that area.
And then did we change the definition? Was it, but we're treating 1 acre and less different? Was it used to be 2 acres and less were treated the same, and now we've reduced that to just 1 acre and less? Is that?
The exception still applies to lots 2 acres and less for homeowners.
Okay.
So the 1 acre and less pertains to the new construction under building permit, and they can use the unrestricted zone to define areas where the trees are protected and where they're not.
Right. And so a larger site, a 2 acre site where you have more ability to move your improvements around, still plays by the same rules where they'd have to mitigate for a tree removed if it's a vacant site at that time.
Okay, and then Mr. Caraway referred to this a little bit about when there was clear cutting that was illegal clear cutting. I had it adjacent to my district over the one you actually spoke about at Forest and 35. Have we made any more teeth in this that we can go after someone that does that, or do they just have to pay the fine and be done with it? I don't like the idea that people could, you know, ask for forgiveness versus permission and make it that's a tool they want to choose to go through.
We have put in a provision which would allow for us to use the forest stand delineation to actually identify what was on the property. Many times when we find that place, sometimes I find on Google Earth or somewhere, a property's been decimated over the last 2 years and no one knew about it.
Right.
I can go back to that, look at the canopy cover, and be able to calculate a possible mitigation based on the new ordinance. And then basically I can charge that property owner for that at least. Currently, I would actually need to know inch for inch what each tree is. And if that evidence is gone, I do not have a way of obtaining that information unless I already had a survey.
So if the question is in terms of, for lack of a better term, punitive damages, you know, we're fixed with what we can charge as a zoning violation. I think it's really a discussion we need to have with the prosecutors in terms of what's really realistic. I think our experience has always been disappointing when we've tried to take very active enforcement and assess per tree, per day, whatever our ability is. That inevitably, it seems when it gets to a judge, it's, well, they've done their best to comply. But I think it's certainly reasonable discussion now that we have a better mechanism to lean back on the code and say this is how we assessed what was actually removed. Because in most of these instances, we don't have a good record of what was there prior to it other than people say what was there. So this gives a more visual reference to help with our enforcement activities.
Well, I hope that's true because
yes.
It's disappointing. I mean,
it is frustrating.
And very frustrating that we can't bring somebody, you know, to prosecute them to the best of our ability when they do something like what.
Well, and we'll have more discussions
in different areas of Dallas
on how we might be able to manage that where we could have better results if it gets to court.
And I think, Mr. Owen, you pointed out, there's times that, I mean, it's obvious in some areas when they see it happening, but when people do it over time and it's not noticed, it's just as damaging, but we don't always find out. So if we can recognize that and do something about it. And then how about with PDs? Is it three-fourths of a vote then? I mean, if somebody tries to use a PD as a zoning tool and to get around Article 10, I don't want that to be happening.
That would be what the proposal would be, taking into consideration quality of life's concerns and the Planning Commission, and come back that, you know, the PDs will allow some alteration to most of our regulations within the development code. Historically, landscaping has been very necessary because we end up with some innovative development sometimes as a result of that. But the tree mitigation side, I think people just wanted to be cognizant of when there was a reduction requested, because oftentimes looking at a 30-page docket,
right,
it's kind of hard to know when something's being changed. By requiring a supermajority vote, then that's one mechanism to raise it to that level of consideration.
So that we'll be aware if somebody's asked for that.
Yes, ma'am.
Mitigation. Okay. And then lastly, I would like to see the reforestry fund used more proactively. It's a little disappointing that we're not making it. We have an opportunity here, it sounds like, to possibly, like, if we could help with the planting side or the watering side, just the money sitting there is not getting us more trees.
Yeah, and I think historically.
So did we look at that? Or
why? Yeah, we can absolutely look at that before council consideration and look at what's reasonable. You know, again, all you're paying into, basically, when you pay into the reforestation fund as an option versus planting trees and maintaining them if they're required landscaping on site, is the cost of the tree. So that mitigation has never been designed to cover for these maintenance issues or the planting issues. We've never included that calculation. So from that point of view, it's not intended to cover that. We don't charge people for that.
But, it also
but I certainly understand the frustration that it's not doing anybody any good if it's just sitting there. But that's been kind of the theory behind it, is that all you're paying for is a tree. And do we want to look it up into mitigation? No. So I think let us meet, have some more discussions. And
okay. Well, that discussion to hold this up. Let's get this voted on. But I really think we need to take a closer look at that. If it's not being utilized and we're not getting more trees, then it's not making a lot of sense.
It is being utilized, but certainly not to the extent.
Could you let us know then how it's been utilized over the last? You've told us how much it's accumulated to, but it'd be interesting to see. So if you
absolutely.
But let's not let that discussion hold this up, and let's move forward.
Thank you.
So, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Atkins.
Follow up on Ms. Kate on the reforestation fund. Who managed that fund?
It really rests with the Department of Sustainable Development.
Okay, so is there how much it costs to manage it a year?
Well, not a tremendous amount. I mean, it's not, you know, it's just a very small piece of a staff member's time.
Okay, when they set this fund up, have the policy been reviewed since this fund been set up?
No, sir. The uses of the fund are established within the ordinance itself. So only to the extent that we've looked at it in terms of proposing additional uses of the fund, including somebody to help manage it, prioritize land acquisition potentially, to go out and do more of that active research to locate places appropriate for acquisition and work with other developers in identifying places that to provide conservation easements.
Okay. In this briefing, most part of southern sectors and city of Dallas, you know, we do have a whole lot of trees.
Yes,
sir. And to get development, to do development, sometimes the trees do get in a problem of development. As you know, with Amazon, you know, about 2 or 3 years ago, we had a big fight. You know, should we build a big facility there or keep the trees? What do you have in this proposal that help the developers who go into the area where the trees are in this mitigation, this hold up a project of development?
Sure. I think one of those things is the sustainable development incentives, whereby if you develop the site in such a manner that's sustainable through the utilization of appropriate landscaping, perhaps stormwater systems, you earn certain credits for that, and then you can be exempt for any development within the building footprint from having to mitigate within that area.
And so when you build a big box, the retention pond, you know, which you got to do that, do you get credit for that? Because when you do that, you got to remove trees.
It can be an element of a sustainable site, But, you know, obviously you can't plant trees within that area.
Right.
But it certainly is an element of sustainable site that would count toward your sustainable development credits.
So.
And impervious coverage. And let me let Phil elaborate a little more.
Go ahead.
Yes, actually, detention ponds might actually be an exception to the regulations under defense to prosecution, that sort of thing. But there's also methods of survey that might determine what, you know, a reduction on the mitigation. So that old field analysis might actually identify some of these properties as having less mitigation requirements than might have been perceived at first glance.
Okay. Is there... In the past, going forward, is there any development project that's held back because of mitigation of trees?
Well, I think there's frequently we work very hard to define mechanisms to help a developer comply. Does it hold it back? I think it's an additional consideration. Sometimes the Board of Adjustment is the option. We're trying to remedy some of those by these additional mitigation methods. We've looked at what the board's approved in the past. And now we've incorporated some of those as additional mitigation options within the ordinance. So can I tell you, we will never have an issue where a developer's having a hard time finding how he's going to comply with mitigation requirements. It depends on his utilization of the property. Is there any open space at all? So I can't say no, but I think this ordinance goes a long ways providing additional options for the developer to address his mitigation needs.
Okay, I know that when we pass a policy and we got it's bound by the policy that we pass, I'm trying to make sure that when we got projects coming down the pipeline, you know, I look at the Inland Port in that area, manufacturers, those type of business would create jobs, $25 an hour job, and people can't get to work, that I don't want to be handcuffed with developer that I cannot bail or whatever because of the trees. And I understand that, you know, people say, hey, you know, Mr. Clam, you know, cotton field, you know, they remove trees before they put the cotton field there because they clear the land. So we had trees way back then. You know, unless you go back and Google and see, hey, when the first tree got planted, when the first tree got removed, I don't know. But my point is right here in the southern part of Dallas, we do have a whole lot of trees, but we need development. And sometimes the trees do hold up. And I know that when we're trying to get Amazon came in on J.J. Lemon, it was a big fight. I mean, it was a drag-down fight. It's a, hey, should we build this building or should we change whatever, you know, because of trees? So I want to make sure that we do look at the development, be friendly with them, that it should not cost jobs, number one, and opportunity in quarter life south because we penalize, we've got trees. And I do sympathize there are not many trees in North, but that is a problem. Mm-hmm. In my district, we don't try to create jobs, and we need jobs there. Yeah. So I would trade a Galleria or Northport for some trees. You know, it'd be great to do that. You know, but that's something that's my concern, and that's why here in my district, you know, we need to protect the tree for the oxygen, but I still got to say we got to protect the developers who are trying to come south. And to do that, if we don't take a clear picture to understand jobs, opportunity and quality of life, and to get restaurant, hotels, and those type of business, and we can't get those jobs or especially manufacturers there, we pay more money than the White House job, then I have a problem with the policy. I understand what we're trying to do, but we got to be more considerate of the developer who's trying to come south.
Right. And I think this ordinance goes a long way to meeting some of those needs, to provide additional options, to substantially reduce any remaining mitigation costs by the utilization of these tools. I'm really proud of the way we handled that Amazon development. In fact, that happened in a hurry. We had inspectors out there almost full-time, had the fire department working to make sure, given the unique facility, that everything complied. And I think we can continue to focus that kind of energy on development. And we will continue to and provide options to the developer, sit down and work with them, meet with them as early as possible with their landscape architects and their site designers to fully take advantage of the provisions of the ordinance to minimize their mitigation.
Okay. How are we going to make sure these developers will be changed? How are we going to market this advertised to the developer so they know that we'll make these changes and how soon we're going to do it and who's going to be responsible for that?
I think most of them are very aware. We've been working closely with the development community. I think for the interim, those properties that are vested certainly can currently work under the existing ordinance. However, I think the advantages offered by these amendments will have people taking advantage of them almost immediately. One of our projects we're still working on that was mentioned within the presentation is to continue to develop the manual that we're working on to provide a handbook for developers and their architects and engineers to utilize when they're designing these projects and do a better job of site design so we can give them the appropriate credits.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kingston.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just wanted to echo the statements of my colleagues that I think that we need to see at council something that looks like a proactive strategic plan for reforesting the city. Have we adopted a forest canopy coverage target? I think other cities have that, don't they, Mr. Irwin?
Many cities have that. We have not done so. The Texas Trees Foundation came up with a project a few years ago, and basically about when this project came about, and gave us kind of what a target might be around here for right now. But we don't have any kind of master plan at this point to determine what the city really wants at this point.
Is that something that you and Mr. Cossum could work on and bring back to us? Is that a reasonable thing to work on?
I think we would work with the Office of Environmental Quality, work with Trinity, and that's a reasonable request. Yes, sir.
It seems like if we set a goal, then that might be the first step toward reaching the goal. Colleagues, I have had Mr. Irwin out in my neighborhood four different times, I think, at this point for tree plantings. And I think we've got 80 trees in the ground. If your neighborhoods need help putting that together, I'm happy to help do it. It's an interesting process because you have people who are very interested in land use. You have people very interested in police and crime watch. But when you start seeking volunteers for trees, you're going to meet the Loraxes, and they will absolutely come out of the woodwork, and you will have more passionate volunteers on trees than just about any other topic. And so it's I will say it takes a little bit of work, but it's not overwhelmingly difficult, and a neighborhood tree planting is a fun day and actually really benefits your neighborhood. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. I agree. We've done it in Grow South several times with these neighborhood associations, and they love to plant trees in southern Dallas, and so it's very important. Let me ask a couple of nuanced questions just so I can get up to speed because I feel like I'm kind of in the freshman course here in this. You said, Mr. Cossum, we don't want to preserve, we want to conserve. What does that mean?
Well, just to be clear, our ordinance has always had the title of preservation. It never really was. I mean, it wasn't so much as preserving established trees as mitigating for their removal, if you will. So I think we're just trying to line up with the wording with what our intent is. We want to do as much as we can to conserve the natural environment while allowing for existing and needed development within the area. So if that requires removing trees, that's all fine and good, but we need to make sure we can replace the canopy. So by that, by conservation versus preservation, the end goal is canopy. So if I have to shift it one way or the other, that's okay. So I'm not necessarily interested in preserving every last
tree. Thank you. Thank you. The other thing you said, that we need to regenerate our urban forest. It sounds like our urban forest is going away, and I feel like we've got a bigger canopy, per Mr. Kleinman's point, in the last decades in the city of Dallas than we've ever had before. Why are we regenerating our urban forest?
I think it's a continuous thing, right? I mean, as we remove trees, we regenerate, we replace, and that's really the objective.
It's not going away, right? I mean, do we have a trend line that our trees are less today than we had them 10 years ago?
I think on balance, I don't know that you could make that argument, but I do think it's important to replace as much as possible as a new development occurs. The canopy.
I got it. But it just felt, that term felt like it was, we were losing it. And I didn't, I mean, I feel that I'm proud of Dallas and the trees we have through this city. I'm very, very sensitive to the issues in North Dallas, just like we talked about with parks, about trees, you know. But those developers planted those little trees, and they've grown into big trees now. Mm-hmm. And we've got a wonderful situation. And I do believe that you've got, this is nuanced, so we can help have our cake and eat it too in Southern Dallas. That's my biggest concern. There's no question. I love having affordable housing, but I want market rate housing in Southern Dallas. And I want developers to come down, build middle class homes, and I want to help them help us to do that. And so I hear the compromises and the collaboration with them to do that as we plant more trees. I do agree also with Mr. Kingston about the strategic plan for these hot spots. I find us, we're so inside baseball about developers, but we really haven't dealt with Mr. Medrano's area, which is one of the hottest area hot spots in the city. Thank you to the Tree Foundation for what they're trying to do in that. And we need to make investments in certain parts of the city for trees and get us all aligned around that, much like we did with the housing plan when we said these are target areas that we're going to do. So hopefully we can get that plan. I only have one question for clarification about the policy, and maybe I'm mishearing some things. The pricing of replacing this, these trees, are based on what? Where are we getting?
Sure. It's an industry-accepted handbook. I'll let Phil elaborate a little bit. I think he's got some visuals.
A guide for plant appraisal, and there's multiple editions over the years. It basically identifies a trunk formula that we that it guides us to in the ordinance. It tells us how to create that formula, or at least derive our formula from it. So that's what we have had since 1995, is a derived formula from the book. We determined that formula, the way it's set up with the price changes over the years. In 20 years, it's, you know, the price of trees go up. And so we included these numbers that's in the supplement for the current rate. The minimal cost for an 8-inch tree goes up enormously. And so we had to modify the formula so that we can make sure it follows the book more precisely.
So how often does the new blue book come out, if you will? Is this about, you know, like cars?
It varies. At one point, it was like over 10 years before we had a new volume or a new edition. So it was it won't come out very often, mainly because it's just a matter of getting the crews or group to produce it.
Well, I'm. It sounds like it's a thoughtful way to approach it. I'm not terrifically excited about the lack of transparency in the ordinance about what this is actually going to cost people. I would like there to be a place they look at it and say, this is what it's going to cost. And it might be derived from that, but I don't know why we couldn't put those costs in there. Mr. Griggs had a point around the bond, that we needed to kind of tell what people actually paid when they voted on it in the long term. And I think we need to do it here. We need to say this is what it's going to cost.
Sure. And we certainly have no objection to posting that cost derived from the formula, and even saying shall not be changed more frequently than every 2 years, post it on the web. We can have a discussion about incorporating to our fee section of the ordinance, which tends to get updated occasionally at the budget time. But I think just transparency is what we're concerned about. Then I think if we publish it and make it available and everybody knows that it's not going to change that very often, then hopefully that addresses those concerns.
It does for me.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Callahan hadn't spoken, and then we'll come back to Mr. Kingston. Mr. Callahan?
Yeah, thank you, Dave, and thank you, Phil, for the hard work. And I want to compliment our ZOAC chair, Tony Shadid, and also my CPC commissioner. I know he has taken this to bed with him more than a few nights and 40 meetings, and I know he's ready to see this thing come to a close. Just want to run through a few things. There was talking about, you know, flexibility and cost. I think that was one of the reasons that we wanted to revisit this thing to make it a little bit more attractive to the development community. And I know there's been a degree of pushback, but I've been working on this for quite some time myself. And I was certainly going to compliment, you know, David Marquis and former council member Bob Stimson, the role that they played in this. You know, Bob was one of the original authors of this back in 94. And so I think, again, flexibility and the improvements, you know, making it a little bit more opportunistic for the development community in Southern Dallas, I think, is good. I think allocating, and I don't remember all the parameters there, but I think it's, what, 2 acres or less, you know, I think you have a lot more freedom and flexibility, as far as you have much larger tracts of land, and obviously you're going to have to deal more with the preservation. But that was where a lot of people were stuck, you know, in the development community. They inherited a half an acre, a third of an acre. That was their legacy, and they just couldn't do anything with it because it was just very problematic in terms of mitigation. So now I think we've reached the right kind of threshold, so where I think it's going to be a great improvement. I wanted to also throw a shout-out to my neighborhood group. They won one of the mayor's challenge grants, you know, for trees. I think we've got about 100 plus trees there, you know, that we're going to be planting in the Military Parkway corridor. So that's real close to my house, and really want to applaud them for their efforts. Neighborhood forest overlays, I think, are really an interesting idea. And I live real close to Sign and Jim Miller, where we have the Sign overlook there, which is just absolutely beautiful. You get up on that escarpment, that ledge, you can see Cedar Hill, you can see, you know, Veterans Hospital, you can see, you know, Cowboy Stadium all the way to Arlington on a clear day. So it's really magnificent, you know, and I want to preserve that. And, you know, perhaps an overlay is the appropriate way to do that, perhaps even federal protection and making sure that people know about it so they can go down and enjoy that. So I also want to applaud a couple of neighborhood groups, you know, Park Delon, the Association of Neighbors, and also Urbandale Neighbors, as well as our Crime Watch group, Citizens Beat, you know, the things that they're doing to try to preserve that into perpetuity and also just make sure that it's kept beautiful and free of litter and trash and so forth. I wanted to also point out, you know, ZOAC and CPC, you know, they strongly, you know, supported this. And there was basically a grand bargain that was developed. I recognize some groups didn't feel that way, you know, but I think a great number of the folks, you know, UFAC and many conservation groups, as well as, you know, the Real Estate Council, a lot of different groups were basically on board with that. But, again, we still have some that are just not. I am concerned about their point of view, clearly, and obviously those folks, we have a close working relationship. But it's a challenge, as I've mentioned to them and others, about when you start trying to tweak, you know, what does that do? Is it, you know, I don't see how we're going to be able to legislate on the fly here to try to make sure that everybody continues to stay happy on this. So that is a concern of mine. I'm willing to take a look, peel the onion back, take a look, see if that could be done. But, again, as you and I have talked, David, you know, if you change something on page 23, it might affect what's on page 47. So that's a concern. I know there's also discussion about, you know, whether the fees ought to be in the guidebook versus the ordinance. I think the ordinance is harder to change, you know, so and it probably should be that way. You know, we don't want to change every year, obviously, fees, but I think it's simpler to get business done if you have it in the guidebook. That's my personal opinion, but I'm willing to look. If somebody needs to change my mind, I'm willing to listen to that. I also have a concern, you know, about walk us through the kind of the three
quarter vote, you know, for the PDs. That was not a CPC recommendation. Would you kind of walk me through that?
Sure. There are certain things today that require a supermajority of council. If it's something that impacts the density over a certain amount, if it's over a certain size, that kind of triggers a two-second vote, I guess, is the way that's typically looked at. So it would just be something that would be on the front of the docket that said this item requires three-quarter vote due to alterations to the tree mitigation landscape requirements. So it would just be obvious that that's included within the doc, included as part of the proposal. But it's an unusual threshold. I can't, you know, we do have it for certain waivers, certain things. It's built into the ordinance, but it is a mechanism to bring it to the attention of council if that's their desire.
Well, there could be a difference of opinion. You know, you may have the ordinance may ask for instance, you know, 10 shrubs, and maybe the PD has 8 shrubs, and you know, then you're really getting into the weeds on some of those things when there's a difference of opinion.
I think the direction at this point really is to focus on the tree conservation part more than the landscaping, and I think that's my understanding at this point. But yeah, I mean, it's really a policy decision to whether we want to incorporate that or not within the ordinance, but it would only pertain to the tree conservation preservation criteria if there was some additional exception or waiver sought.
And let's just take a look at slide 26 real quick. You know, I really like the grading concept there. I think that's really smart. I think that's where probably in the old ordinance we didn't do as good of a job. So obviously recognizing historic and significant trees, the class 1, 2, 3, I think it kind of somewhat speaks for itself. You know, if you go to class 3 trees there, you know, Arizona ash, that's not a very long-term tree. You know, I've had them in a house that I used to own, and they're probably a 25-year tree. Beautiful, and they clearly have tree canopy, but they just don't last long, like ornamental, like the hollies and things like that. They just don't have a long standing. So I'd much rather grade up trees, you know, like the oaks, you know, the hardwoods. Those make a lot more sense. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Ms. Grayson.
Will both of these items go to council in June? So both the parkland dedication and this one?
That was the plan.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take our afternoon speakers. Thank you so much, Ms. Gosson.
Thank you.
Thank you. We do have one afternoon speaker, Ms. Miriam Matthews-Fields. You may come forward, Ms. Fields. You may come up to the podium. You'll be given 3 minutes to speak. You'll notice the time at the monitor in front of you. When your time is up, please stop. If you have any comments, address those to Mayor Rawlings only. You may begin.
To the constituents of the Dallas City Hall and Councilman, Mayor Mike Rawlings, T.C. Brocknett, our manager, and everyone around the horseshoe, my name is Miriam Matthews-Fields, and I am a resident of the community of Joppa.
Could you put your mic closer to your mouth? Thank you.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Sorry. I'm a resident of the community of Joppa. I live at 7939 Trojan Street, Dallas, Texas, 75216. At the house that I presently live at, there was a death in 2014, which was my auntie. She was murdered there. So right after the murder, we came to the city to find out what was going on with the house because we knew that you guys had rebuilt the house for us, and we thank you. We have been residents in Joppa for over 70 years. My grandparents have been there. Actually, both of my grandparents lived on Trojan Street. So my mother, her friend, her cousin, and I came down here, and we did a lot of documentation with a lady named Teresa Davis, who was with that housing program at that time. So we began to start submitting documentation in regards to the house, and she stated that only thing that we actually needed to do to keep the house is that someone needed to stay there a median income. I had just graduated from UNT Dallas, and now I am at Criswell College working on my master's degree. My mother and I was in the house, and 2016, the air conditioning went out. And I had went and been deployed with BCFS to go work with the people in Houston to work with the flood victims. So while I was gone, I got a call that my mother had stage 4 cancer and my twin brother had stage 3 cancer, prostate. So I returned back to Dallas, and we had to move my mom out because my mom was very sick back in like October, November because of her illness. So I found out about the house revitalization program, and I went and asked them, and I went and put in an application for that. So while applying for that, I'm trying to get calls back and find out what is going on. And is my minute's up? So what we found out, what was going on, is there was liens on the property. And no one had told us there was any liens on the property. They have lost the assumption eligibility documentation that we had submitted to them in 2015, as well as they have lost all of our documentation. So we're not understanding why, and then we find out that the lien is up to $19,600. And no one has called us at the address where my mom living at 1619 Michigan, nor here at the address where I live at 7939 Trojan. And they're saying, well, you know, it's possible you're really going to have to pay that money back. And I'm like, well, we're not understanding, you know, why, you know, we have to be in accountability for a loss that you guys did. And you could have been telling us, and we could have been paying on this house at that time.
Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Felder wanted to ask something.
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Good afternoon. How you doing? So I spoke to you briefly about this before. I didn't know this much detail about it. So, Mayor, I'm going to ask that staff, housing, legal, as well as city manager's office to research this, because if it is, in fact, the city's at fault losing the documentation that she said that she submitted, we need to investigate that and see what we can do to assist her. I'm not really sure what the situation is, because that's quite a bit of money. Usually when the city sends something out with regard to liens, I believe they're supposed to send it via certified return receipt. So we, you know, I'm asking city attorney, director of housing, and city manager to investigate this. We want to make sure that we do everything that we can to make sure that she can stay in her home if, in fact, that this is the case, that exactly what she, the way she stated it.
Thank you, Mr. Felder, and thank you. No more speakers,
no
right?
No further speakers.
Meeting's adjourned at 3:02 p.m. Thank you.